is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. Boy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Ready or not, here we come. Are you ready, Donald? Are you ready for a show?
I'm getting ready.
Doesn't matter if
even
you're ready.
Even though we started, I'm still getting ready.
The one thing I've learned, we're 11 months into the show, almost a year into the show, doesn't matter if we're ready for the show. The show is the show. The show is coming down the pike.
Time does not stop.
At 12 noon. It does not stop. It does not wait for us. Of course, we're ready. Of course, we're ready to talk Bills football with you. And the phone line's always open. We've got a game coming up. First road game of the regular season coming up Sunday in Carolina. The Bills and the Carolina Panthers. John Murphy, Donald Jones here to talk with you about it. Our usual jam-packed Friday of football information coming your way today. The Bills at practice right now. How do we know? We can hear the bass bumping through the walls here, right? Right?
Yeah,
and when the
bumping.
Bass stops, I wonder if folks at home on the radio can
yesterday
hear
yesterday, I can tell what was playing, and it was like Bad Boy and Biggie. And, they had some hip-hop. Today, I can't really tell what it is that they're playing out there.
Let's be real quiet for a second and see if the listeners at home can hear it.
Tweet us and let us know if you can hear it.
I can wait. No, I'm just kidding. How long did you dare me to go like that? But maybe we're not just hearing it. We're feeling the bass,
yeah,
right?
I think. You can feel it. It's even worse when they're in the – the crazy thing is that they're actually
they're
outside. Yeah. It's not like they're inside next to us. They're outside on the – on the other side of this thing.
They're practicing. We can hear the music. They should be wrapped up practice, I would think, in 45 minutes, and we got a pretty good show coming your way. Coming up in just a few minutes, 12:30, Mark Kelso joins us on the line from his home in his weekday home in Carolina. Bills are coming to him anyway, so he's not here in studio today. Mark Kelso will join us for his breakdown, what to expect Sunday, the Bills in Carolina. 1 o'clock, our regular Friday feature with Greg Cosell from ESPN NFL matchup. He has looked at this matchup, the Bills and the Panthers, and, of course, looked at what happened in the league last week. Look at last night's game. We'll talk with Greg Cosell about that. The lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander at 2 o'clock. He'll be in studio with us, the Bills. I hope people can hear that. Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us at 2 o'clock. And, of course, coffee with the coach, Chris Brown, and Bills head coach Sean McDermott. All of that coming your way. We'll get a Twitter poll up. We'll have a lot of discussion about the game. But the Bills practicing today. Not practicing today, a couple of players, including one notable one. Just about 2 hours ago, Sean McDermott met with the media here at One Bills Drive and talked about who's going to be missing practice today.
All right, we got two guys aren't going to practice today. First one is Worthy, Jarrell Worthy, with a concussion. And then second one is LeSean. We're just going to rest day. Got a little bit of a groin, but nothing to be concerned about. It was scheduled rest day pretty much, and we're going to do that once in a while with our veteran guys. So with that, you can go ahead and open it up to questions.
Was that scheduled when he suffered a groin injury? Or?
No, it was in my mind I was going to, always want to make sure we take care of some of those guys that need some rest, and so.
And so, LeSean McCoy, not practicing today for the Buffalo Bills. A scheduled rest day, he said soreness in his groin. McDermott later was asked if he's confident McCoy will play against the Panthers. He said he is very confident that he'll play Sunday at Carolina. What do you make of that, Donald?
We talked about all week his workload and everything, and guys are sore, And the one thing is, when you get into football season, you'll have something in a game that might, creep up or whatever it is. I don't know. I think he was already going to get a rest day anyway, And so I attribute that to, look, we're going to need LeSean McCoy on Sunday, so let's go ahead and give him a rest day on Friday and Saturday so that he's fresh and ready to go for Sunday. We need him to win this ball game, and we need him fresh. Regardless of, if he has something creep up in his groin or something like that, it's nothing serious. He will be fine. He will play. But guys have these different things that you deal with throughout the course of the season, and it just is what it is. They have to deal with it.
Is rest day, in your experience, either as a player or even observing, rest day better early in the week or late in the week, like today, Friday?
I think I'd rather rest. Now, here's the thing, because when Wednesdays and Thursdays, those are the long days. Those are like the long practice days. And you know, you might have on pads and different things like that. Friday is a short day, you know. So the Friday practice, you get in and you're out of here quickly, you know, pretty fast. And right. So I can see both sides of it. Where it's like, man, I'd rather take off one of those long days. For me, I'd rather take off Friday because I think Wednesday and Thursday are the key install days, and I need to understand what's going on. It's not just mental reps. I need to get the feel of the plays that we're trying to run, you know, for this game. Friday is more of just a, you know, just cleaning up everything, making sure everything is good going into the game. So I'd rather take off Friday, have Friday and Saturday to rest, and then go into the game on Sunday ready to go.
Well, McCoy has today off, and we anticipate that, you know, he'll be listed on the injury report later this afternoon, obviously, but I don't think it's going to be a problem on Sunday. We want to talk a lot about this game. We want to talk about the various factors in this game. Just check the weather in Carolina for Sunday. Going to be a high of 85, partly sunny skies, humid temperatures. It'll feel like 92, light wind, 7 to 10 miles per hour. So we're dealing with hot, sticky North Carolina weather.
Mm-hmm.
A factor in the game this early in the season?
I think
what do you
so.
Think? Really?
Yeah. You know why? It's a factor because – number one, this team hasn't been in hot, sticky weather like that, you know, so this is going to be a first for them this year as a team together. And because they haven't done it, you will run the you always see in the beginning of the season and at all levels, you know, starting at, you know, high school, then college, and in the pros, early in the season, guys are still cramping up, you know, and you have a team that hasn't been in that type of heat yet. You might run that risk of, I mean, guys have, I'm pretty sure they have done a good job of hydrating and eating the right stuff, but it's still, once you get down there, it's a different feel out there. I remember we would go down to Miami later in the season where it's cold here and we're used to playing in the cold. We go down there and it's 80 degrees in November, December, and it's
right.
Like, man, it is hot out here, you know, and they're good. But we're like, it's hot. I'm tired.
Yeah, but, I mean, here we are in September. It's, what, 70-something degrees out here now. So it's an increase in temperature. It'll be an increase in humidity. Less of a factor now than it would be in November, December, I think, for the Bills going south. Don't you agree
I think,
or no?
No. I think, you know, because it's still early in the season, you still run the risk of really having cramps and things like that. Later in the season, you don't have that same risk. Guys are truly in football and game shape. Now, they should be in football and game shape now, but they've only played one game,
yeah.
You know, so you still have that. You can get into a game when it's hot and you haven't felt this type of heat yet. Come the third quarter, it's like, oh, man, I'm wearing down now.
You know, you make a good point. Of the games I watched this past weekend, including during the week on tape, obviously the Bills, and I watched the Carolina's game at San Francisco, maybe two others. There were numerous occasions when guys were just sucking wind, and I attribute that to, you know, the relaxed pace of play in preseason. People don't play entire games.
Exactly.
But there were a lot, even the Bills, even on Sunday, a couple of occasions where you could see guys huffing and puffing and trying to get acclimated to playing, what, 50, 60, 70 plays a game.
It's a lot, you know. Yeah. And they need the preseason, but they don't play that many plays in the preseason. Even in the third game, you know, they don't play that many plays. So now you got to go four quarters, sometimes into overtime, and now you're going down to do it in some heat that you haven't really played in yet. And so, yeah, it can be a factor because – we haven't gone through this yet. As a team, individually, I haven't gone through four quarters of playing in this type of heat yet. So this is something that, you know, it could creep up. Hopefully these guys are well hydrated and they don't have any issues. I think if you walk around the building, you probably see guys drinking a lot of Pedialyte. You know, unlimited amounts of Pedialyte.
Yeah. All right, well, these are factors. Heat will be a factor. McDermott's familiarity, somewhat of a factor. We've been batting that around all week. But the real factor, I think, Donald, is going to be matchups, player on player. And that takes us to today's Twitter poll, today's topic to get us started. Bills, Carolina, it's an interesting game for this reason, among others. Both teams coming off victories, Carolina on the road, the Bills at home, against, you know, kind of substandard opponents. Two of the, you'd think if you put right now, or no, let's do it at the end of the season, if you're going to list the six worst teams in the NFL, I think both the Bills' opponent, the Jets, and the Panthers' opponent, the 49ers, are going to be in that bottom sixth, right, or the bottom six teams, I would think,
this year.
It looks. There's some bad teams out there. We'll talk about that. However, so both teams coming off wins over opponents that they should handle. They both did. Both teams displaying pretty strong defense, and now you got the second-ranked Buffalo defense, for what it's worth, against the third-ranked Carolina defense, for what that's worth. Both teams, and maybe this is a stretch because they're different styles, but athletic, mobile quarterbacks who can make plays on the run, outside the pocket. Both teams that want to run the ball. Both teams you know, hoping to well, hoping to keep momentum going from last week. I find this a pretty intriguing matchup and a game that will show us a little bit more. Every week will reveal a little bit more about what sort of a team, what sort of a season the Buffalo Bills have.
I don't know how different of styles these teams have. You might have different personnel, somewhat different personnel. I think Coach Sean McDermott likes his tall receivers. I think they play kind of similar, you know, to when you look on the defensive side of the ball, Coach McDermott and Leslie Frazier, they want to have fast guys flowing to the ball. They want to contain everything. They play, you know, they play some man, but they play some zone as well. That's Carolina's defense. They have fast guys that flow to the ball. On the back end, they have some younger DBs. You look on the offensive side of the ball, they want to run the ball, you mm-hmm. know, and then they have a quarterback who is involved in the run game as well. And then they have their passing game off of that. Well, they will get it to their tight end, just like the Bills, and then they will get it to the outside receivers as well. I think they pretty much have the same type of style.
You might be right. And I think it makes for an interesting game, a revealing game for both teams. I mean, the Bills – Sean McDermott has made this point several times this week. With Ron Rivera, the Panthers are in what he calls year 7 of their program. Rivera's mm-hmm. been there 7 years. They have a couple of division titles and NFC championship, you know, on the wall under Ron Rivera. And McDermott says, we're 2 weeks into our, you know, our tenure here. They're 7 years into theirs. And as much as you think big deal, you know, the familiarity that Rivera has with his players, that Newton has with his receivers, that Kuechly has with his crew on defense, that makes a difference. I tell you what, I think that's a bigger advantage than who knows who, you know, who coached last year. I think the experience, there's a reason why Sean McDermott has said that 3 times this week.
Yeah.
Because that's an advantage that the Bills can't erase. They can't make it up. Carolina, this group, essentially, it's the same group that won 15 games 2 years ago for the most part, maybe even better with McCaffrey. They've been doing this for a while. The Bills are just getting started. I think that's a big edge for Carolina.
You know, Carolina, they're what, 7 years into a marriage, and the Bills are still courting.
Yeah.
They're still courting
each other. Still trying to find out who they are.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, he's still, like, opening doors. And
wait a minute, you don't open doors?
Sometimes. It depends on what happened at home before we went out. No, but, yeah, that experience, you know, Cam Newton can be having an off day. He knows at the end of the day, I can throw it up to Kelvin Benjamin.
Yeah.
Tyrod Taylor doesn't know that about these receivers.
Doesn't know that about Jordan Matthews.
Right, exactly. Yeah. He doesn't know that about Jordan Zay.
Yeah.
You know, all he knows is, you know I can get it to Shady, he can make plays. I know I can get it to Charles Clay, he can make plays. Cam Newton knows all of his guys, you know. On the defensive side of the ball, you have these defensive linemen that have played together. You have linebackers that have played together and been all pro guys together and helped this team get to the Super Bowl. The back end is different, but – yeah, you have a team that really knows each other.
I think that's a big factor, and it's 7 years into it. You know, think about Luke Kuechly knows where Kawan Short's going to be, knows where Lotulelei is going to be, knows where Thomas Davis is going to be.
Exactly.
They know each other. I think that's as I said, if you're ranking, you know, people want to say, well, McDermott knows these guys. Yeah, he does, but you know what? These guys know these guys.
Right.
The Panthers know who they are. They won 15 games 2 years ago. These are not, you know, I do think it's a game of matchups, but I do think also it's a game of a comfort level, and there's a, you would have to believe, a real comfort level for the Panthers, maybe especially on offense and defense, that the Bills cannot match this Sunday.
And in my opinion, I think that right there, you know, if you have two teams on the same level talent-wise, that right there gives you an edge because I know exactly what he is going to do. I know exactly where he is going to be. I know exactly how fast he is. We've been working this stuff together for years. There's nothing that we've – now, if we've been 7 years into this thing, there's no formation on defense. There's no formation or anything that we haven't seen that we've had to adjust to together. And if we adjusted wrong the first time or twice – We know now, look, I'm going to say adjust to this, and this is what I'm going to do. You know, I mean, there's a lot that goes into that experience with each other. This team has really gelled over the last 7 years. The Bills are still trying to gel, you know, and so they have an edge in that regard. Coach McDermott, yes, he knows those guys. This is why I keep saying it's all about the players on the field.
Yeah.
It's all about the players on
and
the
Donald,
field.
It seems to me on the field, you can speak to this as a former player, on the field it's – it's as simple as a nod of the head between Kelvin Benjamin and Cam Newton, or Luke Kuechly saying one word that Kawan Short knows exactly where Keekley's going to be and what's going to
exactly.
Right? I mean, it's little simple things like that, but they've been doing it so long together. That's an
edge.
You
know, last night I'm watching the Houston game, and DeAndre Hopkins is out wide, split out wide left. Deshaun Watson is the quarterback, and DeAndre Hopkins had his hand behind his back trying to give Deshaun Watson a signal. Now, Deshaun Watson, this was year two, year three, mm-hmm. year seven,
maybe
with those guys
15.
Together. Exactly. He doesn't have to have his hand behind his back because the DB is standing there, and he came down. He's seeing the same thing I'm seeing on TV. He comes down like, oh, he's giving him a signal right now. So he came down on top of DeAndre Hopkins because he could tell if something is up, you know. And so when you have a team that is together for so long, I don't have to give you a full signal. Yeah. I can just look at you, and we connect eyes, and you know what I'm about to do, you know.
Yeah. All the questions all week about does this give you an edge, Coach McDermott? To me, the real edge lies with the familiarity the Panthers have with each other. Mm-hmm. But it is a game of matchups, and this is not to say that the Bills, you know, are outmatched here. They're not. I think it's a pretty interesting game. Our Twitter poll today, what will be the key to a Bills victory over the Panthers? If they're going to beat them, how are they going to do it? That's the poll we have up on Twitter. That's what we'd like to talk to you about on the telephone line. What will be the key to a Bills victory over the Panthers this week? And it's fairly evenly broken down. 40% of you say containing Cam Newton, okay, that's worth talking about. 33% of you say a balanced passing attack for the Buffalo Bills. That's worth talking about. 20% of you say establishing a run game, and 7% say coaching. I like the way these are breaking down, and we got to break this down a little bit. You're welcome to join us on the telephone lines, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, or via Twitter. You can tweet in your response or just vote in our Twitter poll. What will be the key to a Bills victory if they get one coming home from Charlotte on Sunday? What will be the key elements of that? Who will be the key players? Let us know what you think, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. 40% say containing Cam Newton, Donald. And look, we watched the video. You did get your video thing fixed.
I got it. Yeah. Okay.
Newton was not himself, especially for the first half last week. I would anticipate he'll be a little less rusty this week. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's permanent damage from his shoulder injury. We'll see. Right. He's never been the most accurate passer, but he is a dangerous, threatening passer because he can get outside containment and get outside, throw it from any angle, any right. platform. He doesn't have to be set. Everything doesn't have to be perfect. He can have guys, he's so big and strong, he can have guys almost draped on him and still fire a rocket downfield. Now, mm-hmm. it might not be right on the money, but he can get rid of the ball. So containing him, to me, means trying to keep him in the pocket. And I do think, I don't know if that's my number one key, but to me it is a key for the Bills.
So a key to the Bills' victory for me, my number one key is plastering those wide receivers. Our DBs plastering the Carolina Panthers wide receivers, including Greg Olsen, you know. And first of all, knowing who you're supposed to be covering. Secondly, because Cam Newton, you know, yeah, he's gotten a lot better, I guess, at throwing from the pocket, but he is still a weapon outside the pocket, and he is still a guy who wants to get outside the pocket and make those awkward throws down the field. And if our DBs do not plaster, and plaster means that they can't stick to those guys for a long period of time, you will see big plays down the field to those big, tall, lanky wide receivers, you know. And so they have to stick with those guys without holding. It's not easy. Like, I would not want to play corner in this game ever. Not in today's football, you know, not in the NFL, because you can't touch these guys. Once they get past 5 yards, you can't even breathe on them. They're going to throw a flag, you know. So when you have a quarterback like Cam Newton, who's running around, and then the receiver, all of a sudden, he's running one way, the play breaks down, he takes off and goes a totally different way, and it's like, oh, man. So I would understand why I had to grab him. So
yeah.
He took off a different way. I had to grab him. You can't grab him, though, you know? So you have to actually do a very good job with your feet of sticking with these receivers when Cam Newton gets outside the pocket. And that could be dangerous if they don't do the right thing.
And, again, there's, a little element of familiarity here as well, right? They know when Cam is in trouble where to go, whether it's Funchess, who's been there for 3 years, or Kelvin Benjamin, who's been there, 4 years, mm-hmm. or Greg Olsen, who's been there even longer, I believe.
Yeah.
They know what Cam is going to do when Cam gets outside the pocket. They know where to put themselves.
Exactly.
And he can make throws just from from any platform. You know, the classic, you know, passer stance, standing there, two hands on the ball, feet planted squarely,
right.
you know, 1 foot in front of the other. Cam breaks all of those rules, and not only does he get away with it, he was the MVP a couple of years ago breaking those rules.
He can do it. Now, the good thing is he breaks those rules, and he'll make a crazy throw because he knows he has that strong arm, and it'll be off the mark, you know.
Yeah.
And or he'll throw it into some crazy coverage, the ball gets tipped up, and you get interceptions, you know. So you just have to – You have to force him out of the pocket, get him off of his mark so that he doesn't. If he has his feet planted, then he's really going to throw a dart. Like, if he has his feet planted, he's throwing it right in there, a dart. But if you get him off his mark where now he's running to his left or to his right and he has to throw, you can get those balls more off the mark and you can create those turnovers. And that's what this team needs to do.
As far as what they need to do to win, though, I get it. You got to contain Cam, and 40% of you think that's the key. But I think the key for the Bills, Donald, lies on the offensive side of the ball for the Bills. I think they have to move the ball against this team, and it won't be easy. This is a very good defensive front in some ways, at least as good, maybe better than the Jets. Actually, it is better. I will say it. It's better than the Jets last week when you count the front seven. Up front, star Lotulelei is very good. The other guy is bona fide great, Kawan Short. He's been to Pro Bowls. He's an outstanding, athletic, defensive interior defensive lineman. The ends are pretty good. The linebackers, Kuechly is amazing, and not an amazing athlete, a good enough athlete, but just an amazing football player in terms of his attention to detail, how much studying he does on his opponents, his anticipation of where the ball's going to go. Kuechly, I think, helps Thomas Davis get lined up a little bit, and Davis is a great player in his own right. And for the Bills to have a victory coming out of here on Sunday, they're going to need to move the football. They're going to need to run it. I don't know if they can get 190 yards on the ground like they did a week ago. Mm-hmm. They probably won't get as many rushing attempts as a week ago, but they do need to move the football. And I think the key to that is the matchups up front, offensive line versus the likes of Lotulelei and Kawan Short. Shady, you would think, is going to be, you know, shady and ready to go. But they're also going to need to be more balanced on offense, and this goes to maybe the second point of you know, what we're offering people as far as you know, the keys to victory, and that's a balanced passing attack. To me, that balance comes from throwing it more and using the right wide receivers more. They're going to have to do that to loosen up the box. They're going to have to take some shots downfield. They didn't do a lot of that. Didn't have to do a lot of that against the Jets. But, you know, you'd like to see Zay Jones more involved. You'd like to see Jordan Matthews more involved. And even attempts to those guys downfield will help loosen things up for the running game and the intermediate and short passing game. That's,
you know,
key, I think.
I, as we talk about your key and getting the ball down the field, you know, it's the back end of their defense is young and inexperienced. If there is an inexperienced part of their team, it's the back end of their defense, you know. And so the Bills need to try to do a good job of exploiting the back end of their defense. You're still going to run the ball, but you have to take your shots down the field. They are young corners on that team. So I do think that that is a key to victory. I agree with you there. They just have to make sure up front that they handle they handle that front so that they are not getting the tie rod and tie rod is not getting skittish in the pocket and all of that stuff. One of my keys, I think, is to know, and I know we had Ramon Humber on, and he talked about it's not, you know, where's Waldo, but they do need to know where Christian McCaffrey is. And if you are watching the game on Sunday, you will see Christian McCaffrey line up in so many different places. You're going to be like, if you're listening to me right now, you're going to pay attention to where he is, because you're going to be like, wow, he's in the backfield. Okay, he's at the wing. Now he's in the slot. You know, they might even give it to him in a wildcat. I mean, they line him up in so many different places. And they motion him and shift him and do so many different things. And it's like, are they about to give it to him? He goes back through. He'll motion one way and then fly back through on a jet sweep. And then they fake it to him and pitch it to Jonathan Stewart out the other side. They do a lot with him. The Bills have to do a good job of knowing where Christian McCaffrey is at all times.
I think offense for the Bills is the number one key, and we're willing to talk about that with you. The line's open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It's a Carolina team that loves to take the ball away. They got two of them last week, two takeaways against San Francisco. And knowing what he does about the Carolina defense, Sean McDermott, meeting with the media today, talked about how that Carolina defense thrives on takeaways. Here's what he said.
They're a tough group to prepare for because they're so athletic, and Luke is so aware of things, and they do a great job of communicating on their end as well. I mean, you just got to be aware of where he is, and they do a great job of taking the ball away on defense. You know, that was a big part of their formula last week, and I'm sure one of their big goals this week against us will be to take the ball away. So we've got to be very aware of that and do our part in terms of respecting the football. And, they thrive off of taking the ball away and setting their offense up with short fields.
Sean McDermott, he knows that Carolina defense. Whether that's an edge for the Bills, we'll find out. I do think the Bills are going to have to play smart, not turn the ball over, move the ball on the ground, get some of that balanced offense going, some of that passing attack, and stay in the field on offense is big for them, Donald.
That's the biggest. I think that's my number one key, because I will always say, you know, if you can sustain long drives, and really we're talking about third down, staying on the field on third down. Last week the Bills were 8 of 17 on third down, 47.1% on third down. They need to do an even better job this week of staying on the field. That goes on both sides, because if they're staying on the field, that means they're doing something right against that defense that, you know, Carolina has, a fast-flowing defense. And it also keeps Cam Newton and those receivers and running backs off the field on offense, you know. So they need to do a good job of ball control, and that comes down to staying on the field and converting your third downs so that you can sustain those long drives.
All right, we're just getting moving here, just getting started, talking about what we think the keys to a victory will be on Sunday. We'd love to hear from you. The phone line's open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or on Twitter. We've got a Twitter poll up there. Donald, tonight, Friday Night Lights for you and Chris Brown. Our high school football package begins tonight. Presented by Dent Concussion Center. You've got Aquinas and St. Joe's tonight, 7 o'clock, right across the parking lot of New Era Field. That'll be fun. It's going to be broadcast live on MSG Western New York and streaming live at onebuffalo.com. What do you think? Are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm ready for it. I'm looking forward to seeing the crowds out there and some high school football, some two talented teams. One is 2-0, one is 1-1. The one is 1-1 that has a lot of talent, you know, coming out of Rochester. So I'm looking forward to this game.
Who's going to win?
Ooh.
I don't want to bet. That? I don't. Yeah, you can say. Nobody's betting here. At least not in this room in high school football.
I see Aquinas winning this one.
Aquinas over Joe's, yeah. Donald says. And he's got the game with Chris Brown tonight, 7 o'clock. You can come out here at New Era Field and watch it, or you can watch the broadcast live on MSG Western New York and streaming live at onebuffalo.com. Our high school football coverage, the first of four games, starts tonight, 7 o'clock, right here at New Era Field. We're going to talk more about the Bills and the Panthers when we return. Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, will join us to break down the game from his perspective. That's coming up next on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Live at One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We are back. We are live at One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, as the Bills get set to travel tomorrow to Carolina. Play 1 o'clock on Sunday, the Bills and the Carolina Panthers. You can hear the broadcast on our flagship here in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, and all up and down the vast Buffalo Bills Radio Network. And when you listen, you will hear the voice of our next guest. He is my partner on the Bills Radio broadcast, color analyst on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network, former Bills safety Mark Kelso, live on the line with us from Carolina. Mark, a road game for the Bills, almost a home game for you this weekend, huh?
Yeah, it is a home game. I'm just scouting things out a little bit early down here, that's all.
Well, it's good. I mean, the problem is, maybe it's not a problem. You don't have to travel. You don't have to jump on a plane. You can drive right over to Bank of America Stadium, right?
I can indeed. I'm about 10 miles from there, so it's a much easier commute this week. There's no question about that. And the weather right now is beautiful, so hopefully we can expect the same on Sunday afternoon.
Well, you say beautiful. What's beautiful, Mark? What are we expecting?
Beautiful
on Sunday?
Is 75 and sunny, not a cloud in the sky.
They're calling for like 85 and humid on Sunday, so maybe a little warmer on Sunday, Mark. Will that make a difference for the Buffalo Bills, do you think?
Well, I mean, this close to training camp, you don't think it will, but, I mean, if they've been practicing in some cold weather there, I know it's been a little bit chillier up north. So, I mean, that could play a factor. I mean, I think the healthy rotation of the defensive line, I know there's some consternation about that this week by some people saying, how come someone's only playing this many plays? But I do think a healthy rotation of the defensive line is extremely important to continuing to have a healthy pass rush. And anytime you put pressure on the quarterback, you have an opportunity to create a good play defensively. So I think it's important. I mean, you may, again, that people don't think they're playing enough plays. I think is if they're fresh, it's really important. Now, I don't know about last week when Jerry Hughes was off the field for that entire 13-play, 85-yard drive. But I think it's a healthy component of your defense if you have seven or eight guys defensive line-wise that can play and continue to pressure the quarterback throughout the game.
Mark, that was the point you and I discussed during the broadcast last Sunday, and I agree with you. I mean, I think there were times when I was like, that's not a rotation. That's like guys on the sideline too much. But I told you this, I think. I had a conversation with one of the defensive linemen back in preseason who said the target here, the goal is for no one on the defensive line in a typical game with, you know, 60, 65 plays defensively. The target is for no one to get much more than 30 snaps. That almost is the way it played out last week, I thought.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's – I don't know if that should be the goal particularly. I mean, the goal is to continue to put pressure on the quarterback. And if you're able to affect that by that healthy rotation, then continue to do that. But if you have guys that are having trouble getting there and you've got other guys that – and, again, Jerry and Lorenzo would come to mind because those two guys have been – the leading pass rushers here the last couple of years. So if they're not on the field and you're having trouble getting to the quarterback, I might give them a break for a couple of plays, but then I'm going to want them back on the field in a critical situation. So you want to have those guys fresh when it comes down to the stretch. I mean, if you have to make a stop, and that was what that long drive was in the third quarter, if I recall last week. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't quite as critical a situation as it might have been had that drive taking place at the end of the game where they needed to come up with a stop in order to preserve victory. So in that case, I mean, I think I would want to have those guys on the field unless for some reason they're really exhausted. But I suspect that wouldn't happen and they would want to be on the field in that situation. But a healthy rotation, I wouldn't be charting plays on the sideline and say, well, geez, he's only got 28 and this guy has 36 and I'm going to put the other guy in. Just whatever, however the defense functions in its most efficient manner.
Hey, Mark, you know, one of Murph's keys to victory is containing Cam Newton. Now, I wanted to say get to Cam Newton, so let's just combine both of those. We talk a lot about the Panthers' defensive line and their linebackers, and we talk a lot about the Panthers' weapons that they have, you know, around Cam Newton. What we don't talk about, though, is the Panthers' offensive line. So as we talk about a healthy rotation, what do you think about the Panthers' offensive line and, I guess, the matchup between this defensive front and their offensive front?
Yeah, I'm really impressed with their offensive line, quite frankly. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of them, but I saw that entire game last week, and they are really athletic. They can get to the second level. They're really good at extending their hands and trying to keep the body of that defensive lineman off them, and they really do some nice work. And you know, there's some situations where they might have a little trouble anchoring in certain situations where I could see that Kyle Williams and Marcel inside and Adolphus and those guys may be able to affect a really good pass rush. But this group is extremely athletic. They're out on the edge a lot. And, I mean, someone made a comment this morning, John, when you and I were talking about ground and pound, that they don't. They may have done that in the past, but that is not what this offense is about. They're not about that at all. They're getting five guys out in the pattern. They rarely keep a guy in to block. And when you do that and you're getting pressure, you have extreme confidence in your offensive line. So these guys can get down to the second level. They can get out on the edge and block. They can execute the screen game. So this is, again, I haven't seen a lot of teams this year yet, but I am mightily impressed by this offensive line with the game they played last week against the 49ers.
Mark, what did you think of Christian McCaffrey's NFL debut against the 49ers, and what do you think the potential is for him, and what do you think he'll do this Sunday?
Yeah, very. I mean, I thought he had a healthy debut. There's no question about that. He's dynamic, but the speed of the game is different in the NFL than it is in the collegiate game, and you know, I think that goes without being said. But There was one play that he caught a little pattern he ran, just a little flare pattern coming out of the backfield. I mean, he'll run a circle pattern, he'll run a flare pattern, they'll line him up at every different position. He'll line up at tailback, he'll line up at fullback, he'll line up at wingback, he'll line up at slot, he'll line up at what would be comparable to an X receiver. So he's a weapon that they think can be really effective with certain personnel mismatches. But he caught a ball in the open field against the 49ers, and Navarro Bowman and their other linebacker, I think it was Armstrong, he had 5 to 6 yards of separation, mm-hmm. and Navarro Bowman closed on him like just with great acceleration, forced him back inside, and then stuck out his left arm and got it on his hip, and then Armstrong came and cleaned up the play. a lot of open space. In a college game, I say he goes for 20 or 25. In that particular situation, he went for one. Mm-hmm. So he's learning that part of the game. He needs to learn to get down in certain situations and give up on some certain plays when he's going to take a big hit, because he doesn't have a real thick frame at this point. And he's put together pretty well, but I think he only goes about 205 pounds. But he has a dynamic component to their offense. One of the things that they haven't even done right so far is run that quarterback read. Still think it's part of their program. I think Cam is a little bit reluctant right now, and I think they're a little reluctant to expose him to a big hit. But it just creates a whole new dynamic to the offense, and a smaller version and a much quicker version of a guy like Kevin Faulk, if people recall, when he was so effective for New England, getting out and working against linebackers one-on-one and always being out of the backfield. But he's a smaller version of that, but very, very quick, executes the screen game well, and he's going to come out. They're going to run a bunch of games with he and Greg Olsen, their fine tight end, and it's going to be difficult to defend. The Bills would be wise to use one of those defensive ends to knock him off his track when he's coming out of the backfield.
Now, the 49ers, they actually had, it was 29. He was either a safety or a corner guarding McCaffrey the entire game. The Bills can end up in situations where they have Ramon Humber guarding McCaffrey sometimes. You know, do you think that can be a mismatch?
Yeah, and I think, I'm not sure who 29 was. He was a safety, had a great interception in that mm-hmm. game on a yep. ball that was just underthrown.
Tart.
Yeah,
right?
That's who that is. And it was a beautifully athletic interception. But the corner was in position to make a play, too. And I think that ball was intended for Benjamin. And he will out-quick linebackers. There's no question about that. But you have to take the air out from under him. You cannot let him get to the line of scrimmage and be 3 or 4 yards off, because then he's going to find space. And I think most of the time it's a choice route. So he's going to run his route based on the choice that he makes, depending on where that defender is, on his inside or outside. He may run a little hook pattern, and he'll run a flood over on that side. He may circle back inside and try to get through the middle of the field if it's man-to-man and he feels that linebacker or defensive back on his outside hip. And if he feels him on the inside hip, then he's going to go right to the sideline, and if they're clearing out from the outside, and he'll have some space. So you've got to take the air out from under him. And if Ramon Humber is going to be covering him, I'd suggest he's coming across the line of scrimmage, attacking him, and then whoever's rushing on that side as well is doing the same thing. So whatever track McCaffrey takes in that situation, wherever he ends up, one of those defenders, if they're within striking distance, you've got to get your hands on him and stop his momentum and make him restart before that whoever it is, whether it's a nickelback, a dime, which Bills don't typically play, so they're playing mostly with nickels. So whoever's covering him, you've got to take the air out, and you've got to stop his momentum and make him restart, which makes him less effective, makes anybody less effective in that situation. But if you let him get up on you, get to the line of scrimmage, get a yard past the line of scrimmage, and you're still giving him 3 or 4 yards of space, there's no question that his quickness is going to be an advantage for the Carolina Panthers.
With Mark Kelso, radio color analyst on the Bills Radio Network. Mark, our Twitter poll today, we want to kind of finish with this, and you look at this, you look at in depth into this game, and more than anybody else does. What do you think will be the key if the Bills are going to win on Sunday? On Twitter, 41% of our respondents say containing Cam Newton, 34% say having a balanced passing attack offensively, 20% of our respondents say Bills getting the run game going, 7% say coaching. What do you think? What would be the key for a Bills victory over the Panthers on Sunday?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities here. I really think with the quality of their defensive unit, I mean, it's going to be putting points on the board and being able to manage the football and manage the game so that they provide less opportunities for this Carolina offense, because they have so many weapons, and they're trying to get everybody out into the pattern. So I would think it's how the offense is going to manage the game and not put the defense in difficult situations. And I think if the defense can contain those guys, and much like they did last week, and allowing some of those short throws but not getting beat over the top, but I think they have an opportunity for success. But it's the offensive unit. How are they going to attack this defensive unit and make sure that this defensive unit doesn't come up with a big turnover that gives the Carolina Panther offensive unit some advantageous field position, and they got some guys defensively. Boy, I tell you, I mean, Kawan Short is really difficult to block inside. Their fifth-year player out of Purdue, and then Latulele is difficult as well. And then those that linebacking core, I mean, Thomas Davis continues in his 13th year, and he continues to play at an extremely high level. We know what Keekly can do, and Thompson's really aggressive also. And they've got guys on the back end that have experience. I think there's some ways to attack them, but you can get yourself in trouble, and you can create. They can create a negative play for the offensive unit. They can knock balls down. They get themselves in beautiful positions to defend plays, particularly from the linebacking core that really understand leverage and where they need to be. So if you're not careful, they're going to create a big play and put their offense in a really good situation. So I, for me, it would be getting that running game going, and part of that's a play-action pass game. And so that you keep them off balance and you're able to move the football, because if they can't get that going, then they're just going to be playing this field position game, and there's so many weapons for the offensive unit for Carolina that it would be difficult to come out with a victory.
Mark, great work. Thank you very much. We will talk to you over the weekend. We'll listen for you. I'm standing right next to you. Of course I'll listen for you Sunday. Thanks,
yeah,
Mark.
Yeah, appreciate that. Well, I'm going to have to come back. I guess I got to come back to Buffalo Lake, because it's like a 10-minute segment. We need like 20 minutes, don't we?
So, you need more time?
Too much,
how about 3 hours on Sunday? Can you fill 3 hours on Sunday?
There's too much to talk about to get it in that amount of time. I apologize for the lack of depth.
First rule of show business, Mark, always leave the audience wanting more. The audience wants
more.
You
go.
They're going to come back Sunday to hear what, you know.
Yes, they will.
Yeah.
Yes, they will. And hopefully it'll be it'll be a really good contest. I suspect it will be.
I do too. Thanks, Mark. We'll talk to you this weekend.
Okay.
Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, former Bills safety, 30 career interceptions. He feels like he's shortchanged with airtime.
You shortchanged Mark Kelso?
No, but the clock, you know, moves on. The show moves on, man. Just like we said at the top of the show, ready or not, you know, this is it. It's Friday. This is all
time.
We have.
Next time, Mark, you fly up. You can get on the show.
Yeah.
And then fly back down with the team.
There you go. Thanks. Mark Kelso joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. More to come. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Love Fridays, Donald. Love Fridays around here during the season. Love talking to Kelso. Greg Cosell coming up in a couple of minutes. Love talking with him. You don't get that kind of, and you, of course, you're here every day, but you don't get that kind of intelligent analysis.
You sound like you were tired of me.
No. But I'm used to your brilliance on a daily basis. But once a week, we get Kelso's brilliance. Once a week, we get Greg Cosell's brilliance.
Yeah.
Lorenzo comes in at 2 o'clock today to lighten the mood a little bit.
We call it Friday.
Here's a call from Tom in West Seneca, who has some thoughts on Sunday's matchup, the Bills and the Panthers. Tom, what's up?
Yeah. Thank you for having me on your show, John and Don. I really like it.
Thank you.
I was curious about the two offensive lines. How does the Panthers' offensive line stack up against the Bills' offensive line? And also, I must add to it, I'm in the minority, the 7%. I believe that Coach McDermott is a key, because he gives his team inspiration. And one other thing I must add, I think it was Mark Kelso, I think, that suffered concussions.
Yeah.
And they did apply some sort of accoutrement on top of his helmet.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if they're going to go back to that and use that there as part of the concussion protocol. And that's pretty much it, guys. And thanks again for having me on.
Thanks, Tom. What do you think about the Panthers' offensive line? Anything stand out to you there, Donald?
As we talked to Kelso, I mean, they're an athletic group. But, you know, I'd be honest with you, when I watch the Panthers' offense, I get caught up in watching the weapons on the outside, you know, and truly do forget about that offensive line. They did a good job against the 49ers. I don't know how strong the 49ers' defensive front was. They did a good job against them, though. So we'll have to really see how they stack up versus, you know, our defensive front and see how our defensive front will play them, especially in the run, you know. And I know they like to run the ball, you know. So we'll see how that really plays out.
You know, Kelso wore the plastic attachment to his helmet when he played. That's 25 years ago. the technology, helmet technology is advanced. But did you see what and they talk about, I watched the network broadcast last night of the little bit of the 49ers Carolina game. Did you see what Luke Kuechly has around his neck? He's got a collar, and we got to get this on the show. This is big. It's called a Q collar, and it's a collar that was developed at a hospital in Cincinnati. I guess it's kind of taking flight in Cincinnati where Luke Kuechly is from. It's a collar that stimulates blood flow to the brain that apparently helps cushion the blow in the event of a hit to the head and may help reduce concussions. It's a little collar. They took a close-up of it on the network broadcast.
Really?
Yeah, we got to dive more into this. Doesn't that sound fascinating?
It does.
It has to do with the flow. I'm looking at the cerebrospinal fluid inside the skull. When the head is subjected to impact, the brain can shift and twist within the skull cavity. Those strains are probably the result, or probably the what causes concussions. Helmets can reduce it, but the Q collar by a company called Q30 Innovations clamps down on a person's jugular veins, right in your neck. Collar causes the brain to swell and fit more snugly within the skull.
It causes the brain to
swell a little bit, so that your brain, there's not that space.
I'm just right.
Between your brain and the skull.
And the skull, yeah.
And
maybe that's what a concussion is. Your brain moves.
Anyway, I don't know.
That sounds interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
We talk so much about the helmets themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I think we talk more about the helmets than even the fields themselves, like the fields they need to think about as well. But something like this could actually be something that can help guys.
If you watch the game on TV, see if they talk about it, or see if they take a close-up of Luke Kuechly. Has this, it's like a little greenish, dark collar, about maybe 3/4 of an inch mm-hmm. wide that he wears around his neck.
Okay.
And I guess a lot of high schools in Cincinnati are using it now, too.
Okay.
Interesting. I don't know. How did I get down there? Oh, he's talking about concussions.
Concussions, yeah.
Greg Cosell coming up next. He's a quarterback guru, expert on quarterback play around the NFL. He's the man behind ESPN NFL Matchup, longtime employee of NFL Films. We'll talk to him about Tyrod Taylor, about Cam Newton, about what we saw last night, and much more. That's coming up after the top of the hour, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Bills wrapping up practice moments ago. Not practicing today, running back LeSean McCoy. A scheduled rest day, according to head coach Sean McDermott. With soreness in his groin, McDermott says he's very confident that Shady will play Sunday at Carolina. Also not practicing, defensive lineman Jarrell Worthy with his concussion. Yesterday, cornerback Leonard Johnson was limited with a quad muscle strain. We'll find out later today on the full extent of participation at practice today for the Buffalo Bills. They're headed to Carolina tomorrow. Play the Panthers at 1, kickoff at 1 o'clock. You can hear the game on our flagship here in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, with the network pregame show starting at 11 a.m. Texans defensive end J.J. Watt says his finger is, quote, pretty messed up after he re-injured it last night in Houston's 13-9 victory over the Cincinnati Bengals. He first injured his left ring finger during their loss in Week 1. He said the fact that it was attached during the week was all that mattered, but after Thursday's game, he says he got a check to make sure that the finger was still attached. NFL has filed an emergency motion with the United States Court of Appeals seeking a stay of the preliminary injunction that blocked Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott's 6-game suspension for violation of the personal conduct policy of the league, looking for a ruling by Tuesday, but no later than September 26th. Jacoby Brissett expected to start at quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts Sunday when they play their home against Arizona. He'll get the start over Scott Tolzien, who played last week but was benched in the fourth quarter of the Colts' 46-9 loss to the Rams. Jacoby Brissett scheduled to start. The Sabres hit the ice today for their first day of training camp. 2 workouts at Harbor Center, free and open to the public. The Sabres will open their preseason scheduled games next Monday against the Carolina Hurricanes at KeyBank Center. Tomorrow, they're on the ice at 9:45 with the first session, 11:45 for the second session, as we said, both sessions free and open to the public. And the Cleveland Indians, all they do is win. Last night, a walk-off victory. It's 22 consecutive wins for Cleveland. Jay Bruce with an RBI double in the 10th. Indians are home tonight against Kansas City again. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones on this Friday. Bills getting set to go to Carolina. We're getting set to talk to a guest who's now making regular appearances for us on the Friday show. He is a longtime producer of NFL Matchup, senior producer for NFL Films for 37 years. Happy to have Greg Cosell on the line with us. Greg, John Murphy and Donald Jones, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Gentlemen, good to be with you guys. The AFC East leading Buffalo Bills.
How about it? We take nothing for granted here, Greg. The Bills did a lot of good things in Sunday's game, and I wanted to, you know, you do focus on quarterbacks, and I wanted to start you off by talking about Tyrod Taylor's game. What did you see there, and what was there a different Tyrod Taylor in Sunday's win over the Jets than maybe you've seen in the past?
Well, I think the best way to answer that, Murph, is we know the nature of the opponent, but that's irrelevant. That was a game in which the Bills played the way they have to play on offense. It starts with the run game, and then there needs to be some first and 10 passing that goes along with that, that complements, and they have to be successful. The key about first and 10 passing is you're likely going to get predictable coverages. And there were two really good examples of that. When he hit Zay Jones for 21 yards on what I call bang play action, which impacts the underneath defenders. And then you had the 35-yarder to Clay. Both of those, you're getting coverage you know you're going to get. That allows Tyrod Taylor to be efficient. And that's what you're hoping. You obviously have to hit those plays in games. But essentially, the Bills in this game played offense, Murph and Donald, the way they have to play to be successful.
Now, Greg, you know, people here talked about Tyrod Taylor throwing the ball over the middle of the field, or at least his lack of throwing it over the middle of the field the last, I guess, couple of years. He seemed to be a little bit more comfortable doing that last week. Did you see the same thing?
You know, that's a hard question to answer. I think what you're dealing with is, I think we know what Tyrod Taylor is. So you're trying to structure a game plan and build your offense around what he can do. Hopefully the game plays out and so you can limit what he doesn't do real well. And you're trying to create defined reads and defined throws. Now, those could be over the middle. You know, the one that he hit to Zay Jones, the play that I mentioned was over the middle, but that's a defined read. It's basically a one-read throw. So that's okay. You can do that. I think when he has to sit back there, if you start getting into the longer yardage situations, Donald, where he has to drop back and be a late in the down pocket quarterback, that's where I think he's not real comfortable throwing the ball in the middle of the field.
I wonder what you thought of last night's game, Greg, and in particular the NFL debut of Deshaun Watson for the Houston Texans. What did you see?
You know, I obviously haven't watched the tape, but I watched the game through close to three quarters. And I'll tell you the one thing that bothered me watching on TV, and they did point it out during the game, and as you guys know, Murph, you mentioned it, I study quarterbacks in great detail, have for a lot of years, is how quickly Deshaun Watson dropped his eyes in the pocket. And you can't play quarterback like that in the NFL with any kind of consistency. Now, last night's game played out. They played an opponent that did not score a touchdown. So one or two plays can make a difference. He obviously has mobility. He can run. That's certainly a factor when you have a poor offensive line. But if you're just looking at isolating the play of the quarterback, which is what I do, then that's something I would keep a close eye on as I studied Deshaun Watson throughout the rest of the season, because I imagine he'll end up being the starter, barring injury.
Is that something that you see these young mobile quarterbacks coming into the NFL? Is that something that they do more than other quarterbacks will?
I would say that's very fair, Donald, because don't forget, all these guys who are very mobile, from the time they started playing quarterback at a young age, they always knew intuitively they had the ability to escape and make positive plays by using their legs. Quarterbacks who are not those kinds of quarterbacks, you know, the Tom Brady's of the world, from the time they picked up a football and played quarterback, they had to get rid of the ball in order to make a play. So the question becomes, is it in a quarterback's DNA or can it be coached out? And that's, I bet you'd get different answers from different people on that. Right. But I think it's something that always concerns evaluators when you're looking at college quarterbacks transitioning to the NFL.
With Greg Cosell, senior producer of NFL Matchup, ESPN NFL Matchup, senior producer, NFL Films. Before we, and I want to get back in for a minute to this week's Bills matchup, Greg, and get your take on another really mobile quarterback who can make plays on the run, Cam Newton. What did we see from Cam last week in that really kind of a bad start? Ron Rivera talked about the rust there, but did he play himself out of it? Is he back to Cam Newton, do you think, this week?
That's hard to know, Murph. I think you have to give him a pass. For last week, he hardly played in the preseason. He's coming off shoulder surgery. Cam, keep in mind, has never been a naturally accurate thrower. There's always going to be some relatively routine throws he misses, and then two plays later, he can make an unbelievably great throw. That's the way he is. It's why he's not a high percentage passer. Plus, their pass game over the last number of years has tended to be a little more vertical. It's intermediate and vertical. Hard to say after 1 week where he stands. He certainly missed some things. I guess we'll see. You know, Cam's a little different. He's capable of running, but I wouldn't say he's a runner. I don't think he drops back looking to run. I think he's basically a pocket passer who has the ability to run.
He can make plays outside the pocket with his arm, right? I mean, he's almost as anybody in the game.
He's a power thrower, and what I mean by that is there's not a lot of touch and pace to his throws. It's why in his career up to this point, he's not been very good in the short passing game because he does not have natural touch. So he's a power thrower. He can throw a lot of the dig routes, the in-breakers at 15 to 20 yards. He certainly can throw the deep ball, the vertical ball. But he hasn't been up to this point. I know they would like to do more of that. Certainly now that they have Christian McCaffrey, they'd like to do more where he gets the ball out quicker. It's an open question as to whether he can be efficient and effective in that kind of pass game.
Greg, I want to – sorry, we're jumping around on you a little bit. I guess I got to get back to the game from last night and Andy Dalton and how he looked. Yeah. People now calling for A.J. McCarron to back up. Andy Dalton hasn't really been able to take that team to the next level. So how did he look last night to you?
Just watching on TV, not very comfortable. And again, going back to week one where he threw some interceptions, that a quarterback with his experience, you just wondered what he saw and why he made some of those throws. Only he could answer that. But he looks uncomfortable. And that's not an X and O point. That's just something you can see. And he's a veteran quarterback. You wouldn't expect that. So I don't know if he doesn't trust his protection. I don't know what's in his head. But he certainly does not look calm and poised, as he has, quite honestly, much of his career. He's been a relatively calm player. So the first two games of this season, he's not been a poised, composed pocket player.
Greg Cosell from NFL Films on the line with us. We talked with you last Friday, Greg, about the last Thursday's game and the way the Patriots played. They've got an interesting matchup now in New Orleans, a couple of 0-1 teams playing in New Orleans this weekend. I wonder, what do you think the Saints took from watching the way Kansas City defends the Patriots? And what have teams been trying to take away from the Patriots' offense? What do you expect the Saints will do?
Well, look, I'm sure, after I say what I say, I'm sure what people will say is they'll probably hang 40 on the Saints, and that's very more than likely the case.
Yeah.
So let's start there. But the last two meaningful games that the Patriots have played, which was the Chiefs week one, and then, of course, in the Super Bowl, both those defenses, the Falcons and the Chiefs, basically structured their approach to take away their staple in-breaking routes, at the shorter level, kind of those crossers.
Right.
And each team did it differently. We don't need to go into a tactical, clinical explanation, but both teams did it differently. And I'm sure Dennis Allen, the coordinator for the Saints, will look at that, and he'll try to figure out, how he can do that within the context of his personnel, which quite honestly is a work in progress for the Saints at this point. So what I think the Patriots need to do, and they've had extra time, they need to work outside a little bit more. They need to work outside the numbers. And there's different ways to do that. That doesn't mean having wide receivers just run isolation routes on the outside. You can work outside the numbers with your route concepts, but I think that's the area now that the Patriots need to attack.
With Brandon Cooks, they might be, well-equipped to do that kind of a passing attack, correct?
And he's an interesting player here because if you go back to the Super Bowl, Malcolm Mitchell became a really important part in the fourth quarter, late in that game. But he's a much more physical receiver than Brandon Cooks. Malcolm Mitchell could run hitches against corners and kind of push them out of the way. Cooks is not necessarily that kind of guy, but I think he'll be interesting in this matchup. I think Chris Hogan becomes a huge factor in this matchup. And then, of course, you have Gronk, who can, you can work him. Even if he starts as a line of scrimmage tight end, you certainly can work him on outbreaking routes and get him out of the middle of the field.
Another matchup, going back to the South, really, Aaron Rodgers versus Matt Ryan and the Green Bay Packers and the Atlanta Falcons. What do you think about that matchup?
Well, look, these teams played twice last year. Matt Ryan threw for almost 700 yards with 7 touchdowns and no picks. And one thing that the Falcons are really good at is they're really good at attacking specific coverage. They certainly were under Kyle Shanahan, and I think that's an important point to make here. We're not 100% sure how it will play out against Steve Sarkisian. We saw a little of it against the Bears. But they're really good attacking, particularly what we call two shell coverages. And Donald, you know exactly what I mean. It's it's either cover four or cover two. Falcons are really good at that. So we'll see how it plays out. They're going to need some pass rush in Green Bay. They're going to have to get some pressure on Matt Ryan and get him out of his rhythm. He's a very rhythmic player. And if he feels comfortable with his drops, his sets, and delivering within the timing and structure of the pass game, then he's a really difficult player to defend.
We're with Greg Cosell from NFL Films, kind of breaking down some of these games coming up and some of the quarterback play. I find this Vikings game at Pittsburgh intriguing, a couple of teams that won their opener, and in particular, Sam Bradford, who was just outstanding in the opener for Minnesota. Can he do that against a Pittsburgh defense, would you think, Greg?
Well, the one thing I never can get a handle on is home versus road, and I know that factors into who wins and loses games. It's just I always have a tough time getting a handle on that. But I would say that the way the Vikings played last week, and I give a ton of credit to Pat Shurmur, he had a great feel for the defense he was playing against in the Saints, really in terms of formations, in terms of route concepts, tactics. They did such a good job. Now, the one thing you know about the Steelers, you get fairly predictable coverages, particularly on third down. They're a zone-based cover team on third down. Now, they'll play some man, everybody does, but they're more high-percentage zone, so Sam Bradford will probably face some pretty predictable coverages. If he can stay protected, that'll be the challenge in this game. Right. The Steelers do have some people up front, even without Steven Tuitt, but they'll if they can protect him, then I think he should be pretty efficient. I mean, don't forget, he was efficient last year, even behind a poor offensive line.
Hey, Greg, has Sam Bradford, in your opinion, done enough for the Vikings front office to say, okay, you know what, you're going to be our franchise guy moving forward and move on from Teddy Bridgewater?
My guess is, Donald, they've made that decision already. He's a more talented player than Bridgewater. Again, who knows? Bradford, you know, he needs to get through another season playing 16 games. If he does that, he'll have a solid season and maybe a very good season. So my guess is that they've probably moved on from Teddy.
We're with Greg Cosell from ESPN's NFL matchup, Dallas-Denver. Late Sunday afternoon, Dak Prescott off to a good start with the Cowboys last week. And this guy doesn't put it up for grabs, apparently,
no.
Greg. He's not going to throw interceptions, huh?
No, he won't do that. And I think, again, I look to Scott Linehan, who I don't think gets enough credit here. Watching their tape and watching their pass scheme, again, third down is the critical down. Prescott was excellent last week. He was excellent as a rookie. But I think that Scott Linehan does such a good job with his formations, with his route concepts, defining the throw, which you're always looking to do for any quarterback, but certainly young quarterbacks on the difficult third downs, is define the throw so that when he drops back and he understands the route concept, he feels that he can deliver the ball within structure and timing. And I think Linehan does a really, really good job of that. And it's, look, I would never say about a quarterback in the NFL, it makes it easy, because it's never easy, but it really helps to define a throw, and you feel comfortable turning it loose.
Monday night, I would think, you know, most people on the East Coast fell asleep the San Diego-Denver game, so you didn't really get to see Trevor Siemian do his thing. But, you know, I watched the beginning of that game, and he was moving that offense. How do you feel about Trevor Siemian?
You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority, Donald. I kind of think Trevor Siemian is one of those orchestrators, distributors. Mm-hmm. I think he's not a bad player. You know, they obviously need to have a consistent run game. He needs to play behind a functional offensive line. But I think given all that, he can run your offense. And you know, Donald, having played and knowing how coaches think, what do coaches want, offensive coaches? They want the quarterback to efficiently and effectively run the offense that they've game planned all week, right? That's what they want.
Yep.
And I think Trevor Siemian can do that.
Hey, Greg, a couple of quarterbacks who will always be linked because they went 1-2 in the draft last year, Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. Both of them showed some signs last week that maybe things are beginning to click in a little bit. Can you talk about Goff and Wentz and what you see there?
Well, Wentz to me, Murph, he showed a lot of those signs a year ago.
Yeah.
I have no issues with Wentz. I think he's a highly talented kid. I think he has a skill set that you could say is similar to an Andrew Luck. I think what he probably needs to work on is just there are some routine throws here and there that he misses with poor ball placement. But I think he's clearly on the right track. Goff now, and this is the importance of coaching. You know, Goff now, he had no chance a year ago. Now he's got a chance. Sean McVay is in some ways like Kyle Shanahan, really good designing pass game concepts. I thought last week, look, they ran a number of concepts to death, and they were consistently open.
Right.
I thought that the numbers were better than Goff actually played, but it was a game to build on and to move in the right direction, and you can just see that he's a more comfortable player right now in this offense.
Now, does it make him more comfortable to have a Sammy Watkins and know the rest of those receivers around? He has a few weapons out there.
They got a lot of weapons.
that he can really rely on out there.
No, everything is now in place. He has weapons, and they have two tight ends who you can line up outside, and the rookie Gerald Everett and the second-year player Higbee. Mm-hmm. They both can be detached from the formation. They have Watkins. They have Woods. Cooper Kupp, when I watched him coming out of Eastern Washington, I thought he was the kind of guy that could roll out of bed and catch the ball in the slot.
Right.
So they have every dimension in their offense. So this is Goff is set up beautifully with personnel, and I think with McVay he's got a really good designer and play caller.
Got one more second-year quarterback to ask you about, and he's going to get the start for Indianapolis, Jacoby Brissett. Is this a desperation move from the Colts? What do you think is going on there?
Well, I think Brissett has talent. I mean, I've watched Brissett for a long time. I got a chance to meet him when he was in high school, and he was the same size as a junior in high school.
Wow.
So he's a talented kid. He's got a big arm. He can move. He had some plays in his last year at NC State where you said, wow, that looks like Ben Roethlisberger. So I'm not suggesting he's Ben Roethlisberger, but he's a talented kid. I don't think this is a desperation move. He's a far superior talent to Scott Tolzien. So we'll see. He's going to get a chance here. None of us know about Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Brissett's going to have a chance. And look, we know they've had some O-line problems, but that's another team that has some weapons on the perimeter.
Yeah.
And last thing I have for you, Greg, and it's not necessarily a quarterback question, but a Seattle Seahawks question. They put up 9 points in their loss at Green Bay. I mean, what do you think? Are the Niners exactly what they need, or do you think there's cause for concern out there in Seattle?
I don't know about that, Murph. The Niners have a pretty good defense with a chance to be a very good defense as the season progresses. And what was so evident watching the Seahawks is right from the start, they were using a back and Jimmy Graham to chip to help their offensive tackles.
Mm-hmm.
And you start doing that, you lose the numbers game. That takes two receivers out as primary threats. And so you're working with three primary threats then. Every team would like to send five eligibles out, and they have to worry about pass protection with their tackles. So I'm not sure how they fix that. Maybe not quite this week anyway. And this Niner defense is people can't fall asleep on this defense. They have some talent.
I do have a quarterback question, and it's about Jay Cutler down in Miami.
He's making Jay Cutler questions. I don't think there's anything there.
Jay Cutler has weapons on the outside, you know, so could he be the quarterback that can take that team over the hump?
That's a hard question because of the way he's played over the last number of years. There's been such an inconsistency to his game for many reasons, but they do have weapons, and I think they're expecting Devontae Parker, who's predominantly going to line up as their X, as their single receiver to the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
They expect him to have a big year. The one thing you can say about Cutler, he does turn it loose. He will throw to the one-on-ones, and that's what they're expecting him to do, both with Devontae Parker and with Julius Thomas, who will line up in that same position. So it's hard to know how Cutler will play for 16 games, but he's an aggressive attacking thrower. He's always been that way.
What's the most intriguing game on the schedule this week, Greg? Seems like there's a lot of meat on the schedule this week, it feels like.
Yeah, there are some good games. I mean, I guess I'm, you know, from a tactical standpoint, there's two things I'm anxious to see. What New England does offensively and how the Giants play defensively against Detroit, because these two teams played late in the season last year when Detroit needed a win and they could not score an offensive touchdown against the Giants. So I'm anxious to see what Detroit does.
Hey, Greg, thanks for this. We'll talk again next Friday. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Greg Cosell, the senior producer for ESPN's NFL Matchup, senior producer for NFL Films for 37 years, a regular Friday 1 o'clock guest for us as we go through. We really fire on quarterback questions, Adam. You had to get your Jay Cutler question in.
I had to get that. And not a big Why? Fan, huh? Just not.
No,
a big fan.
I just don't. I mean, I've seen enough Jay Cutler to last a lifetime.
I have, too. Trust me. I have, too. You know, I don't know if the weapons down there, if he feels rejuvenated having weapons. Who knows? We'll see how it plays out. I think the Chargers team is a good defense and offense, you know, so we'll see how they play this week. But, yeah, I had to get that question out. We did fire a lot of quarterback questions, and he's able to just answer them like that.
A lot of film study there. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Greg Cosell for joining us on the line. We've got more coming up on the show. Stick around. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones, thanks for tuning in. We just finished up with Greg Cosell from ESPN, NFL Matchup. You know, right off the hop, I asked him about, I think we both asked him about Tyrod Taylor's game last week. You know, we're looking, I guess, trying to find out if he saw, in Greg's review of the video, if he saw signs that maybe it's a different Tyrod Taylor. I don't get the sense from Greg that he saw that, right?
No.
More of a different, maybe a different approach that the Bills coaching staff used.
Yeah, I don't know if I mean, it seemed like he was throwing the ball over the middle a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think we've still seen somewhat what this offense is with Tyrod Taylor as the quarterback that we saw last year, you know. And with the exception of those couple of passes he went over the middle, yeah, it's a different scheme-wise. But in terms of how they move the ball, the efficiency and how they move the ball, the points that they will score, I think we will end up averaging somewhat right around what we had last year in 25 to 26 points per game. So, yeah, I think I don't know if there's much different about Tyrod Taylor than last year.
I agree. And we'll see. It's a work in progress, right? Every game we'll get more evidence. I want to know from you, we've been asking the question all day, for the Bills to beat Carolina, what's the key? That's our Twitter poll. What's the key to a Bills victory over the Carolina Panthers on Twitter? Right now, about 41% of you, 2 out of 5, say containing Cam Newton is the key. 35% say a balanced passing attack, 34% say that. 18% say establish your run game. 7% say coaching. I'm going to fall into the category of passing attack and establishing a run game because I think the key to a Buffalo victory lies on the offensive side of the ball for the Bills. Maintaining possession, moving the ball, opening up the passing game downfield a little bit. Not that they have to worry about time of possession or keeping the Panthers off the field, but they've got to be able to move the ball. And this is, I think, a pretty big step up defensively from where the opponents the Bills looked at last week.
You know, I wasn't really a good test taker in school. So if there was an answer, if we had multiple choice answers and there was like a none of the above or all of the above, I was probably going to choose all of the above or none of the above. So I'm going to go with none of the above on this one. And I think that the key to a victory here is what I said in our keys to a victory, you know, and what do they need to do? I think they need to plaster the wide receivers. I truly do. I think that these wide receivers, including the tight end that they have, can be great matchup problems if the Bills do not do what they're supposed to do and plaster these wide receivers. And I think if they can cause for big problems for our defense and they can make big plays for their offense, you know, and so – if they don't, and I guess you got to put McCaffrey in there as well because he can line up as a receiver. Mm-hmm. You got to plaster all of these guys. So I would go with none of these, and I would go plaster the wide receivers.
Plaster. Give us your thoughts. What will it take to beat Carolina? Let's take some calls. Brad calling from Rochester. Hello, Brad. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. First of all, every time I hear that Cosell guy talk about quarterbacks, I always wonder why he's not hired by an NFL team to help them draft their next one. But my thing is about Marcel Darius and how McDermott said it takes a selfless defensive tackle to basically tie up linemen so other guys can make tackles. And if anybody's been shown that they're far from being a selfless player, it's been Marcel Darius the past 2 or 3 years with his suspensions and being late. But, I mean, it's common sense that all these guys want to make plays. They want to make plays. So if this team starts losing games, how long do you think it will be before Darius gets bored and tries to play his way out of Buffalo or just doesn't try hard anymore?
Well, to be honest with you, Brad, I don't really give a darn if Marcel Darius gets bored. You know, he's the highest paid player on the team by a lot. Board or not, he's got to produce. I'm all on board with the defensive line rotation. I don't have a problem with the number of snaps Marcel Darius got last week or is likely to get moving forward, but he does need to make those snaps count much more than he did last week. And whether he's bored or not, I don't care, and I'd be surprised if the coaching staff cared whether he's bored or, you know, I don't know how he plays himself off the roster. His contract is somewhat prohibitive, right?
You know, regardless of what has happened in his past and the things that he's done off the field, I totally get that, and I totally get why people feel the way they feel. But when you line Marcel Darius up on the football field on Sundays, he is going to give you what he has. If he's fully healthy, he's going to give you what he has.
Was it enough last Sunday for Marcel? For the snap? I'm not talking about
the snap count.
The number of snaps.
Right.
Did he make it? Impact? I'm sure he made some impact.
Yeah, you know, it's so hard because when we talk about an impact, it's like, okay, is he getting in the backfield? Is he making plays in the backfield? And I don't know if we've seen that from him last week, but I also didn't pay attention to see if he was getting double teamed the entire time. You know, now we know he can beat double teams because he is that talented. But, you know, I think when he's on the football field on Sundays, he's going to give you everything he has, you know, if he has to eat up a double team the entire day to open things up for other guys, that's effective. You know, that's helping everybody else out.
They need big plays. They need impact plays. I'm not talking about sacks, but run stuffs, disruptive play from him. They need it.
They weren't really able to run the ball on this defense last week. The Jets weren't. Even though he wasn't necessarily in the backfield tackling guys in the backfield, his presence was felt up there. You know, they weren't able to move that defensive front.
Yep. Okay. Well, I see what you're saying. All I'm saying is I'd like to see more. Yeah. Not more snaps, just more from Marcel Darius.
No, I got you. Especially if he has less snaps, right?
Yeah. In fact, he should be able to produce more effective impact plays if he's on the field 59% of the time. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Edric from New Jersey. Hello, Edric. You have thoughts on Sunday's matchup and how the Bills can win?
Yes, sir. How you guys doing, man? By the way, a good show today. A lot of good guests coming on.
Thank you.
I think, I don't know. I'm not that impressed by the Panthers. I never have been. They've been a mediocre team with one really great year in between all the mediocrity. I've never seen the quarterback be, and Cazell said it, I've never seen the starting quarterback in the NFL be less accurate than Cam Newton has been for his entire career. I think Cam Newton doesn't process the field as quickly as he should for a guy who's been a starting quarterback for 5 to 6 years. If he wasn't a runner, if he wasn't as physically gifted as he was, John and Don, I honestly don't think he'd be a starting quarterback in the NFL. I think you'd have Tyler.
Edric, let me slow you down. What are you saying? If he wasn't as athletic and as physically gifted as he was, well, of course, that's what he has. That's what he brings to the game. That's what makes him dangerous, I think.
Yeah, but the quarterback position is so much more than that, John. That's why Tom Brady has been as successful as he's been for so many years. It goes way beyond athleticism.
You know, but I think as Newton proved a couple of years ago, he has, you know, enough of the rest of the attributes you need from a quarterback. Right. Not his strong suit, and I know what you're saying, but it's not a strong suit. But as he demonstrated, the NFL MVP a couple of years ago, he has enough, and I would say even more than enough to be an elite quarterback. Was he there last year? Nope. Was he here the year before? Yeah, he was. I mean, he's got it in his resume. It's in his background now.
I know, John, and I know it's a hard league, so it wasn't by mistake. But, I mean, he's been in the league, 5 years, as long as Marcel? 5 or 6 years? And
seven, right?
Very, very good year. Mm-hmm. 7 years? Yep. One very good year. I don't know. Just I'm not a big fan of his. We beat them in 2013. Hopefully we can beat them again. And one more thing, John, that I want to point out. I think the advantage of Sean McDermott this year is going to be huge, not just for this game, John, but against the whole NFC South. I think the perfect example is just 2014 with Coach Schwartz as our defensive coordinator. We went against the NFC North that year, and we were 4-0 that year against them, John. And I don't think those teams scored – I don't even think they scored 24 points on us. I think that the familiarity that he has with those teams, I think it's huge. I think it's a huge advantage. And if we can win 3 out of those 4 games against the NFC South, I'd be pretty happy with that.
What do you think, Donald?
I got to go back to Cam Newton and what he talked about with Cam Newton. You know, that really is what he brings to the game. And one of the things that Greg Cosell did say, though, is we all look at Cam Newton and we think, oh, he's a mobile quarterback. You know, he gets outside the pocket. He can make plays outside the pocket. But watch his film. He will he does stand in the pocket and make throws. You know, he stands in there. He wants to – he really does. Out of all of the mobile quarterbacks in the league, Cam Newton is one of those ones that will stand in there and make plays and make throws. Now, they use him a lot in the run game. For me, for my, I think that's design runs. You know, you see them do read options and everything where that's actually design runs for him to actually run the ball. I think Cam Newton is a pocket passer. Is he off with his accuracy at times? Yeah, that's been one of his biggest knocks, you know. And does he not – he doesn't have the touch that other quarterbacks have, you know. And I don't even – that's something that he really does need to develop, especially in the short and intermediate game. But – you know, that's what he has. That's what he brings, his physical stature. That's his game, you know. So we can't say if Cam Newton didn't have that, he wouldn't be a starting quarterback. You know, if Tom Brady didn't have his arm, then he wouldn't be a starting quarterback in this league. If he didn't have his brains, he wouldn't be. If was a fifth, Murph, you know what? We'd all be drunk right now.
I've never heard that one. Where'd that come from?
My father.
I like that one. If was a fifth, we'd all be drunk by now. I kind of like that one. Edric made a very good point about Sean McDermott's familiarity with the opponents and with the quarterbacks the Bills will face this year. In fact, McDermott, I forget where we had the conversation. You might have been there. Made the same point in a conversation we had at preseason. If you look at the Bills' schedule, who they're playing this year, Carolina Panthers played a very similar – you start, obviously, with the NFC South. So McDermott last year and the Panthers went up against Matt Ryan in Atlanta, Jameis Winston in Tampa Bay, and Drew Brees in New Orleans. Last year, the Panthers also played Alex Smith in Kansas City. They also played Derek Carr in Oakland. They also played Phillip Rivers in the Chargers. Mm-hmm. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And Denver. I forgot about Denver. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7 opponents for the Bills this year were on Carolina's schedule last year. You know, McDermott at the very least, has formulated defensive game plans to go up against those teams and those quarterbacks. You would think that would be an advantage, right?
Yeah, it's definitely an advantage. You know, he has an advantage this week because he knows these teams. But, you know, I'm always going to say it comes back to these players making plays on the field.
Yeah.
You know, and the advantage that the coach has, I can put you in the right place, but I can't make the plays for you. You know, so these quarterbacks, you're going to have to play against these guys, and you are going to have to make plays. You are going to have to cover up the receivers. You are going to have to get to these quarterbacks, get them off their marks. These are the teams that are on the schedule. Yeah, I can help you and all of that stuff, but guys, go out there and make plays, and you'll win games.
Looking ahead to Sunday in the Bills game against Carolina, we're going to continue that as the afternoon rolls along, and we've got Lorenzo Alexander coming by at 2 o'clock to talk more about that. Looking ahead to next Tuesday also, right here at One Bills Drive, Units Upstate New York Transplant Services is going to once again team up with the Bills and a blood drive, asking fans to help save lives in Western New York. Units blood drive coming up here at New Era Field next Tuesday. Our buddy Lauren Hall from Pagula Sports and Entertainment has more on that.
Hey, good afternoon. We're hanging out with Billy Buffalo at Units in West Seneca. That's because it is Bill's Blood Drive Week here at Units. We do this every season. We're teaming up with Units to help save lives here in Western New York, and we need your help, Bills fans. So come out to any of their 4 neighborhood location centers throughout the next week, and you'll be registered to win one of 100 pairs of tickets to the Denver game next Sunday. Right now, we want to bring in Sarah Dina. Sarah, again, we do this every season. This is something that we're so passionate about, helping save lives in Western New York. So if you come to any of the blood donation centers like the one right here in West Seneca, what happens? Walk us through the process.
It's such an easy process to donate blood. It takes less than an hour of your time, and you're potentially saving up to 3 lives. 3 lives right here in this community. We supply blood for Kaleida Health, ECMC, Hospitals Niagara, and Wyoming Counties. So you're doing a great thing in a very little amount of time. Saving lives is huge, and why wouldn't you do it?
Of course, that's absolutely right. We have, again, 1 pint of blood can save 3 lives in Western New York. And it's not just blood, right? You do organ, tissue, and much more.
Yes. We're an organ, eye, and tissue procurement center. So if you enroll as a donor, you have the potential of saving actually up to 75 lives. So it's a great thing to work with Eunice, to donate blood, to enroll as a donor. There's really nothing better.
Billy is really passionate about this cause as well. We're so happy that he's here today. And if you want to see Billy, you can come again today to the neighborhood, to any of the neighborhood centers today through next Friday. But Tuesday the 19th is the big day of this week. So tell us what's happening that day, Sarah.
We will be at New Era Field in the Paul McGuire Club from 11 to 7 on the 19th. It's an awesome day. We have a lot planned for our blood donors. Steve Tasker will be there, Preston Brown, Billy Buffalo,
DJ Milk. Yes,
DJ Milk will be spinning throughout the day. We have lots of snacks, exclusive tours for our donors. And again, everyone will be entered to win one of 100 pairs of tickets to the Denver game, which is pretty awesome.
Again, that's Tuesday the 19th. You can meet Billy Buffalo, Preston Brown, Steve Tasker, take tours, and be registered to win some of those tickets. But if you can't come, that's absolutely fine. You can visit any of these neighborhood blood donation centers through Friday the 22nd. Where are those centers? We're at the one in Southgate Plaza in West Seneca. Where else are they?
The Eastern Hills Mall in Tonawanda and at our unit's headquarters on Broadway.
And these are really special places because you have regular donors that come in here every week, right?
Yeah, we have some donors who are here every 2 weeks donating platelets. We have others who are here every 56 days donating whole blood. So it becomes almost like a second home to these donors, and we're their family, and it's great to see.
All right, we're going to introduce you to one of those donors right now, Bills fan. So, Billy, I think you should come over, too. Thank you, Sarah. We're going to go over to Martin here, who comes in every 2 weeks to donate platelets. Hi, Martin. How are you?
Oh, how are you doing today?
Good. This is a perfect interview because you can't get up for a while, can you?
I can't go nowhere.
You're not going to run off on me. So what makes you want to be a regular donor?
It's something that humbles you, and it's just so easy to do. And I've been a faithful donor now for 5 years. And I try to get in every couple weeks. And in the beginning, it was every once a month. But I got a good blood count, good iron, blah, blah. So Barb V downtown told me I'm a good candidate for platelets. So I just kept at it. So it gives me a good feeling and something I can do. And it's just the scope of it helps so many people and just humbles you and makes the heart feel good.
Martin, thank you so much. Billy's giving you a little applause right here. And if you want to be like Martin and help save lives in Western New York, do it this week during the Bills Blood Drive Week with units. You can find all the information, sign up to make an appointment at one of your neighborhood centers or for that Tuesday, the 19th blood drive at New Era Field, right at units.org/teamunits. Again, we'll see you on Tuesday, the 19th at New Era Field.
All right, Lauren Hall, thank you very much, Lauren. Thank you, Billy Buffalo. Billy didn't have much to say today.
He didn't.
The units.
It would be cool if he actually said something.
I would love to hear what Billy Buffalo sounds like. The units blood drive here at New Era Field next Tuesday. More information to learn about it or make an appointment, go to units.org, UNYTS.org/teamunits today. And that comes up next Tuesday. Donald and I back to talk more about the Bills in Carolina right after this, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Kind of a busy day here. Typical Friday at One Bills Drive. The Bills practice day wrapped up. They're getting set to come in here for a walkthrough tomorrow and then hop on the plane to head to Carolina. What's that Saturday walkthrough like, especially when you got to make the plane, Donald? What's that like for players?
When you have to make the plane?
Yeah.
Man. It depends on who you are on the team. Rookies?
Yeah. Have to bring food and stuff?
It was the worst. My rookie year. Like, I had to bring food for the entire wide receiver room.
Yeah.
So I had, you know, Roscoe, Stevie, Lee Evans. They were the only vets who were still in there.
And we're not talking about Reese's peanut butter cups here, right? You got
to
order.
So they would make orders at different restaurants, and you got to actually go home, get dressed, run around to all of these different places, pick up their food, and bring it to the plane. And you didn't have much time after the walkthrough to get to the plane. You might have had, like, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours.
It is kind of funny when you're on the charter and you see the rookies come on with, like,
all types of bags, yeah,
of food,
and they're handing out food.
Great.
Yeah, it smells great. And you get on the plane and you're eating, like, peanut butter sandwiches, peanut butter and jelly.
Right. I should have Sal bring me food now. He's not the rookie anymore. No, I don't need food. There's plenty of food on the plane, but that's part of the routine, right? The rookies have to feed everybody.
Yeah, so, you know, you have your Saturday walkthrough.
And you got to pay for it, too?
Yeah. They know you're about to get a game check. You got a game check last week. So, okay. Yeah, you can afford it.
So you go to the walkthrough.
Yeah, you go to the walkthrough. And then afterwards, you have a couple of hours to go home, get changed, say your bye-byes to your family, hugs, kisses, and then go ahead to the plane. And you got to be at the plane by what time?
1 o'clock, 1:30 tomorrow, I think it is.
Yeah, and, you know, some guys are speeding up the highway because they're about to miss it.
Oh, yeah. Your thoughts on what it might take to beat Carolina Sunday. Joe's on the line with us. Joe, what do you think? What will it take? What's the key?
I think it's going to take exactly blanking the receivers, but you got to have a spy on either McCaffrey and hopefully on Cam Newton. I think that's only we're going to stop them is to make sure that one of those two don't go crazy on the running. So I'm thinking take the best guy and put him on your as a spy for either one of those two. I think we'll be all right.
What do you think of that, Donald?
You know, if you put a spy on somebody, it's going to be on the quarterback, you know. And you always run the risk when you put a spy on somebody of taking that one defender out really out of the play. You know, he's not in – the rest of the play and trying to defend the rest of the offense. So, yeah, I think that can work, but you can't do it every time. You know, you got to mix it up and you got to confuse Cam Newton and the defensive line and linebackers, the combination, they have to do a good job of getting to Cam Newton and getting him off of his spot. You got to do a good job of covering McCaffrey, and I think they're going to do that with the mixture of, like I said earlier, the 49ers had, was it their safety, number 29?
Yes.
They had number 29 covering McCaffrey out of the backfield. I think the Bills will have a mixture of probably Micah Hyde because last week Micah Hyde was covering the Jets running backs coming out of the backfield, you know, from the safety position. So that's the biggest – this is why I keep saying they have so many weapons. It's like, okay, if Micah Hyde's covering the running back, well, who's covering the tight end?
Yeah.
You know, so the Bills might have to go nickel. When McCaffrey comes in, they might have to go nickel so that you have – Micah Hyde on the tight end, and whoever the nickel cornerback is covering McCaffrey. It's not going to be an easy task for these guys.
Nope. We're going to talk more about this game and what it might take to beat the Carolina Panthers in the third and final hour of the show. Plus, Lorenzo Alexander will join us in hour number three with the lowdown, his keys to a Buffalo victory. Of course, you're welcome to join us as well. Come on back. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Got the update from One Bills Drive. The Bills finished the practice week today anyway, and coming off the practice field, the injury report is out. Jarrell Worthy out again with a concussion. The Bills defensive lineman, the backup, will not play. Questionable is cornerback Leonard Johnson, who came up with a quad muscle strain yesterday. The Bills list the following players not practicing. Worthy, LeSean McCoy did not practice today with what's listed as wrist and groin. Sean McDermott saying earlier in the day he's very confident that McCoy will be ready to play Sunday at Carolina. A limited practice for Leonard Johnson with his quad. The Bills and the Carolina Panthers, 1 o'clock Sunday at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina. We've got the game covered for you on our flagship radio station in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, with the game pregame coverage starting at 11 a.m. on the network. Jacoby Brissett expected to start at quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts in Sunday's game against the Arizona Cardinals. He gets the start over Scott Tolzien, who started back in week one but was benched in the fourth quarter. Brissett has only been with the Colts since September 2nd after being traded there by the New England Patriots. Regular starter Andrew Luck, who signed a six-year deal worth $140 million back in June of 2016, has yet to play for the Colts this year after having surgery on his shoulder in January. The NFL has filed an emergency motion with the U.S. Court of Appeals seeking a stay of a preliminary injunction against a U.S. district judge that blocked Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott's six-game suspension. League is looking for a ruling by Tuesday, but no later than September 26. Sabres are on the ice for training camp. Two practices today, two more tomorrow. The first session at 9:45 in the morning at Harbor Center. The second session at 11:45 in the morning. The practices are free and open to the public. Sabres open their preseason schedule next Monday, 7 o'clock at KeyBank Center against the Carolina Hurricanes. And the Cleveland Indians, all they do is win 22 in a row. They're home again tonight against Kansas City. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones on this Friday show before the Bills hit the road to play at Carolina. The Lowdown is here. Lorenzo Alexander here with the Lowdown on Sunday's game. Lorenzo in studio with Donald and I. Lorenzo, thanks very much. Good to see you, Friday.
Oh, yeah, always good. Yeah, back in the studio. So
how you feeling? You know, everything good?
Yeah, I'm feeling great. You know, it's still early in the season, so body's still in place and feeling good. Things moving around.
Just to let you know, if you have family back on the West Coast or anywhere around the country, they can see us if they have DirecTV now.
They can see the show?
They can see the show.
You know what? I think my mom might have mentioned that because she just got, like, the DirecTV set up, and I think she watched it.
Now they can watch you.
When okay. you were on? Or when?
I think, yeah, when we're on. Okay. Yeah, she's only going to watch when I'm on. I'm sorry. Nah, I'm messing with
look,
you.
Mama made it. I'm on TV.
Tell her thanks.
She works. I mean, yeah. So.
Turn it on at 2 o'clock and turn yeah, it off at right. 2:20 when you're going.
Yep.
Nothing else All on right. TV.
Yep.
How do you, over the years, how have you found that your family keeps track of, and you've been around the league a little bit, how do yeah. they keep track of how you're doing, how you're feeling, what your team
I mean, I think
doing?
The biggest thing, you know, with internet and Google and all that stuff that you have ready to you at the fingertips, really on your smartphones these days, they do a good job of just kind of looking me up or having a Google alert. So if an article or I may be coming on, obviously, the John Murphy Show, it pops up and reminds them, and they kind of stay clued in.
Donald used to talk about, well, what did you say, your friends and family would say, hey, did you see what they're saying about you?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see how they're dogging you?
I tell them I don't care. Don't tell me anything that anybody writes about me, good or bad. I really don't care, you know, because you're always going to have people that like what you do. You're
right.
always going to have people that don't like what you do. And if you're constantly just calling me, hey, man, I saw what they said. I don't care what they said about me. I'm not reading it. You shouldn't read it either.
Do you do that with your family, friends?
Not really. You know, I'm a little bit – my mom would hit me up like, look at this article. She'll repost some stuff, and that's what moms do. So, you know, I kind of – I don't – like, you know, Donald saying, I don't kind of, you know, put everything into it and like, oh, yeah, that's great. You know, I enjoy it with her and then just kind of let it go away. But I'm a guy that – I actually look up stuff. I like to look – see, like, on Twitter. So I'll search my name from time to time to see what people say. So – and I like the negative comments because some of them are quite funny or a little motivating. Like one guy thought I was on steroids, you know, because I'm you know, balling like I came out of nowhere. And so and then sometimes I'll even call him out because one time when I actually.
Don't you know better?
Yeah, no, I had to call him out. You know, he and I'll just it's nothing crazy, but just responding back to him. Like one guy called me, I believe I can say this word, whore, because I went from the Redskins who pulled a deal from me and I ended up signing with Arizona and he was upset that I went to a different team and called me all that. I was like, dude, man, this is out of pocket.
This is a reporter?
No. Oh, okay. No. It's a fan. But then when I called him out, he apologized. So I think most people normally act out of anger or their emotions initially, but.
And this all went on Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah, Twitter. Yeah.
So people ask Twitter,
right? You know, somebody said something to me and John on Twitter a couple weeks ago. And it was a negative comment, and I responded, and I was like, well, call us up so we can talk
right,
about
yeah.
it. And he just copped the plea instantly. And then another fan was like, wow, way to crumble.
Right,
like,
yeah.
That's how it goes.
I just like to call them out and see if they're going to step up or not.
Yeah.
Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us for the lowdown on Friday. Hey, one of the things, we don't talk about it, we've never talked about it, you know, the officiating crew is set. Walt Coleman gets your game on Sunday. Do you guys or anywhere you've been in the league, do they – have a scouting report on certain officials or officiating crews? What
yeah,
they
normally,
call, what they...
normally we'll get a scouting report, and we normally do that like Saturday mornings in most places that I've been, and just kind of give you a heads up on some of their tendencies because some people like calling personal fouls or pass interference or defensive lineman holding, and it just kind of gives you a good heads up. Okay, well maybe I can't do this week, or maybe I can get them to call something by just throwing my hands up, and they'll call a hold like on a. Like a vice or something on punt. So it's different ways you can try to create an advantage for yourself or be aware of some things so you don't hurt or harm the team.
Do you you've played in this league now for some time. Do you have certain, I guess, relationships with referees where you can say, yo, man, what type of call was that without them actually getting upset with you?
Yeah, there's some guys that I'll talk to commonly before the game that I kind of know and seen them around the league and talk to. And then there's some guys that don't like me because I've gotten to their face or just call them out. Because, like, last year, and I actually saw him this year, and it was a preseason. He might have had our home opener or something like that. But last year in the Jets game, he was letting stuff go. And I was like, hey, dude, what you getting paid still? What you trying to get home or something? And I was on him the whole game because he wasn't calling nothing. I mean, it was bad. Face mask.
Yeah.
I even had one he didn't call. But I was like, dude, you can't do this. Guy's going to get hurt.
Right.
So this year he came back. Oh, I see you calm down now. You okay? So when you do your job, I won't say that to you.
That's awful. You hear about that in baseball all the time. You know, baseball umpires bait players sometimes. But that really goes on in football too?
Like, oh, it goes on. And some refs, I wasn't in it. But one of my teammates got, like, face-to-face with a ref. Like, some of them are aggressive. They don't you saying too much to them.
They don't.
They got thick skin. That's part of the job.
I would think so.
It is part of the job. Like, you know, you're missing calls out here, man. Like, we always talk about these full-time refs and the refs missing calls. And, you know, both of us feel like they should have the same stake in the game as the players and coaches and GMs. Because
be their profession, just like right.
Exactly. You know, because if I can get fired from my job for messing up,
yeah,
you know, I don't want anybody to lose their jobs. But, look, you didn't get your job done.
Right. And I get it. And, I mean, I guess they always say, and I guess I'm being devil's advocate here. I guess they say the guys that are the best at their job, if they had to do full time, they wouldn't do it because they make more money mm-hmm. as a judge or a lawyer. And those are the guys that you don't want to cut out of the game. And I'm just being devil's advocate. You know? But I would rather see him be a professional, be in there.
Right.
Obviously, the NFL makes enough money to pay these guys a high premium if you want your games to be played at a high level and officiated well. So, you know, that's definitely something they need to continue to look at and see about getting guys, I think, for the full time and really digging in. I think it'll make the game better.
With Lorenzo Alexander, the lowdown on Fridays when we take a look at the upcoming game. But just one look back at the win over the Jets, really you had to be pleased with how you guys played defensively. Is there any sense at all that you're stepping up to another higher level of competition this week based from, you know, from last week?
It's just a different team. I don't think we're kind of breaking it up week by week, you know, next whatever week is up and looking at that opponent, analyzing them and what they do best. It's not about who's better, who's worse. It's about how can we beat our next opponent. It happens to be Carolina. Do they have a few more weapons? Yes. I mean, obviously they have Cam Newton. They have some guys that you know outside. They have more chemistry. Greg Olsen, probably one of the best tight ends still in the game, pass-catching tight ends, has some new toys in McCaffrey. So I think they have more star-studded power. But in the NFL, everybody has good athletes. You just may know some of certain guys versus others. And I think that's what it kind of comes down to. And I think the media fans get caught up into that, where there's great players across this league, whether or not you know their name or not.
You know, we were just talking about Cam Newton and his mobility. When you watch him on film, is he a quarterback that – wants to stand in the pocket, or is he a guy that wants to get outside the pocket?
He's a guy that wants to make plays. So if that means standing in the pocket, he'll stand in there. But if you start getting in his face and press him, he'll roll out and turn into backyard football and still make plays down the field. You know, right now I think he still hasn't found his rhythm quite yet. And obviously he only had one preseason game come off the shoulder surgery and is still trying to figure it out, obviously with McCaffrey being introduced into their offense. But he's going to be a competitor, and obviously we can't allow him to find his rhythm against us. So we have to get after him early and often and try to make him, you know, pat the ball with some looks on the back end and put some hits on him because he is a big guy. But like any quarterback, they don't like being hit.
So that's one of the elements in the lowdown. Now, don't allow Cam Newton to find his rhythm. You watched the video, obviously, of their win in San Francisco last week. Were we looking at rust, or are we looking at bigger problems than that for that offense, do you think?
I would call it just rust, because he hasn't been out there. Yeah. I mean, he is the guy that makes the engine go, and if he hasn't been out there to get the reps, the looks, the communications, the unspoken, you know, trust between wide receiver and quarterback, like, I know where you're going to be, so I can throw this blind. You know, maybe some of his mechanics, some of the things that he needs to work on as far as looking guys off. Just little things that make you elite. He's probably just a little bit behind just because he hasn't had the physical reps.
Yeah.
But he's a great player. So with that said, he gets any type of confidence, he can explode on you.
Yeah.
I mean, this dude was the MVP, and he has that in him. So I'm not banking on what he looked like last week. That he might have knocked all the rust off then, if you want to call it rust, had another good week of practice, and comes out, you know, firing all cylinders. That's why as a front four this week, especially when we have an opportunity to get him in third and long, we have to get after him and hit him as early and often.
You know, we were talking earlier on the show about the Panthers and them being, you know, basically together as a team for the last, 7 years,
yeah.
You know, and this team now, a lot of new faces, you know, and what I say, I mean, they're 7 years in a marriage, and, you know, the Bills are still, like, dating or courting. Just trying to figure out, like, okay, do I want to take you home to mom and dad, or what's the deal here?
Well, I don't know how you are with your relationship. I'm all in, baby, with my wife.
What I said to Murph is, it depends on if we going out, it depends on what happened before we going out, you know, or –
What?
What? What are you talking about?
Murph said, you don't open doors? I said, man. if we got into something, you know what? You open your own door today.
Wow.
That's right.
Well, that's the type of guy you are, huh?
That is the type of guy I am.
Come
that's
on,
right.
You got to rise above that, man. Hey, man.
Anyway, let's get back to the team. All right?
I don't know where you're going with it, but okay. So pretty much you just said is, so if we have something bad that goes on within our team, that it's all man for themselves because we don't have any history together. I mean, we don't need you in the locker room, man. You stay right over here in this
studio. I'm horrible for this locker room.
Yeah,
all
man.
Right. I'm bad for this locker room.
I think what Donald is trying
to say. Don't save him. Leave him out there. It made no sense.
I'm already out there. Anyway, I'll be all right. I can clear that up.
Yeah, let me see this.
Cam Newton knows his wide receivers, and he knows he can throw it up at any given moment to these big, tall wide receivers. So I know you guys want to get him off his mark, but – you know, he knows these guys, and as where Tyrod might not necessarily know our wide receivers. So how do you just get them off his mark? Matter of fact, let's talk about their offensive line.
Yeah.
What do you see in their offensive line?
Oh, they're solid. They work well together, but I think individually, like any offensive line, they have some holes where they can be beaten. I think with Jerry Hughes and Kyle Williams, those guys can get after anybody in this league. So we're looking forward to getting after him and rushing the passer and knocking Cam Newton off his spot. I mean, that's what we're doing. I mean, we're not – you know, they have Khalil. They have Trey Turner, who plays very well. I'll be going up against Williams. So they have some great guys. But I think we have – I believe in our guys more so than theirs.
Yeah.
The lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander. Part two deals with actually the Buffalo offense against the Carolina defense.
Yeah.
And really good linebackers there at Carolina.
Great linebackers. And, their defense is the bell cow of their team. That's what – you know, if they're playing lights out – it's going to be a hard day to beat him, especially if you allow Luke to do what he does. And I've played against Luke a couple of times and been kick lead. You feel like you're winning, he comes up with the pick. You get back in the game, he gets another big play, a pick, and finds a way to score. But along with that, you have Thomas Davis, who's been in this league a long time, 13 years, actually came in with him as a rookie to Carolina. Is a dominant player, a very physical guy downhill, and as well as Shaq Thompson, who's still a young player developing into a very great linebacker in this league. And if those three guys can kind of flow and fly around and make plays all day, it's hard. So we have to be great in our run game, be dominant up front, which they also have big D linemen. Yeah. But knocking those guys back and making Luke come up, being physical with him, and make him unsure of what he's seeing. Get him moving laterally so he can't just stay and play that center field position playing great vision like he likes to do and making some breaks.
Isn't that his strength, though, like seeing stuff? And I was talking to Coach McDermott about it today. His film study must be incredible. He'll move to a hold before it even develops. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
Exactly. And, I mean, he's going to be there, so you have to be extra physical with those guys or give him a little misdirection and then make him unsure, second guess. And, you know, he's an all-pro, so I don't know if you're going to get him, but if you can get him once or twice or get him to play slow just a little bit and give you that edge to get that ball in there, that's going to be key. But it all starts with that run game.
I know, you know, you have respect for the rest of the players throughout the league, and we all know about your story and what you've done to get yourself to the point where you are now. But Thomas Davis and everything that he's been through to be the player that he is 13 years in and still playing at the top of any linebacker in this game, you have to have a lot of respect for a guy like that.
Yeah, like I said, me and Thomas are really close friends. We came in together in 2005, maybe something about that 2005 class, and we got Aaron Rodgers in there as well. But, you know, we just have great, great guys that are cut that old school cloth, you know, hard nose, able to overcome, resilient guys. Obviously, he has had three ACL injuries that he's overcome, and still to play at that high level is, I mean, it's awesome to see. It must have been something in that water that we were drinking in 83. But he's just a great guy. I've seen him develop over the years, a great person off the field, does a lot of stuff. He won Walter Payton Man of the Year a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So he's one of those guys you would want your son to have his poster on their wall in their room.
2005, I was still drinking the water out the water fountain in my high school.
Lowdown number three, and this deals with special teams, and you like what you've seen on tape for them on special teams?
Yeah, controlling their gunners. They have some young guys out there, number 10 Samuel and number 19 Shepherd, who are very athletic, speedy guys. And we have Brandon Tate, who is one of the good returners in this league. But for order him to get started, we have to be able to control those guys and now allow them to get down the field and make him fair catch balls or be disruptive when he's trying to return a punt. So hopefully – We really want to focus on those guys, be able to lock them down with our jammers to give B. Tate some room to let him do what he does. And last week he had a big return as well. So we can create that field position. It's only going to help us, especially going against that stout defense.
Well, what about McCaffrey and his punt return game? We talk about him a lot on offense, but he's their returner as well.
He's a returner, and obviously we gave up one last week. But I still feel confident in our guys. Cole has been doing a great job of punting all week, being very accurate in his directional kicks. And if we can pin him, we'll be fine in our coverage and getting down. Last week, that was a ball in the middle of the field. And also with McCaffrey versus the Niners, when he caught his ball, it was kind of in the middle of the field. And when you have an athletic guy where he can go either direction, it's hard. So
it is hard.
We really need our punter, to be obviously accurate where he's kicking the ball directionally, so we can pin him along that sideline and be able to waylay him a little bit.
I remember as a gunner going up against like Devin Hester and those guys, and running down, you don't know where the ball is. You know, you're kind of going off of the returner, and he's dead in the middle of the field, and you're like, oh, man. You kicked it in the middle of the field.
Right. You don't know what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Those guys, Devin Hester, D-Jack, DeSean Jackson, Tyreek Hill now, like their start-stop ability is crazy. And to give them the ball in the middle of the field is like, man, what are you doing? You talking about nervous. That's the only time I'm really nervous. Because now you're about to be on somebody's highlight reel, or you might get blown up after they break you down, you go to chase.
Exactly. There's always somebody coming. You go
to right.
Boom.
Well, now you're talking about controlling gunners. I'm thinking double team the gunners, but there's more than that involved. Can you do more besides just double team a gunner?
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to double team them. You can, bring guys from inside the box and come out and chip them. You can double team them. You can, have a guy go down that's an MDM guy that's out of the box that doesn't necessarily have him at the line, but is sitting in the middle of the field waiting for him to come to him. Mm-hmm. So there's different ways to be disruptive with those guys and kind of throw them off. We'll have a little bit of everything in our game plan for that.
Hey, we've been talking, Donald and I, all week, and it was a big topic in the media this week about how much Sean McDermott's knowledge of Carolina might benefit you guys. Can you tell us the truth? I mean, is there tips? Are there tells? Are there things that he's saying or not really?
He knows the personnel and tendencies, obviously, of the offensive coordinator and the head coach. At the end of the day, he can tell us where the play is going, but if we don't beat our matchups or win our one-on-ones, it doesn't matter. So it comes down to the players executing the scheme at the end of the day, because he's not out there in the middle of the play letting us know what's going on.
Right.
He's just prepared as well. We have our keys and our tendencies probably more locked in this week than any other team just because of his time there. And that's probably the only – advantage. But even then, you can know everything they're going to do, but if you don't execute it, it doesn't really matter. So we got to be more physical than they are up front, really, this week.
Lorenzo, good luck to you. Thanks for coming by here.
No, I appreciate it. Each and every week.
Yeah, Fridays at 2. Lorenzo Alexander with a lowdown. Lorenzo joining us in studio. Donald and I back with more. We got Coffee with the Coach coming up with Chris Brown and Sean McDermott. Come on back for that. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Always good to have Lorenzo in here. It's kind of a signal that the game is approaching, that the week for us is ending. And I'll be honest with you, Lorenzo pumps me up a little bit. By the time he gets to us on Fridays, you can see how much he's thought about the game, how much effort he's put into the game plan. It's kind of I find it inspiring. Is that okay to say?
I really think he's
a pro's pro, man. He's a pro.
He's a pro's pro. I think you kind of need that because, you and I study film, and you have certain days throughout the week where it's like, man, they can exploit this. And you have other days like, uh-oh.
Yeah, we don't have a chance.
Yeah. And then so you go back and forth. It's like a roller coaster. And then he comes in on Friday, our last big segment of the week, and he pumps us up. So
He does a good job, and he's a good broadcaster too. We love having Lorenzo Alexander. We thank him for making time with us on Tuesdays. Want to hear from you about the game. What are the keys for the Buffalo Bills? Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Manny calling from Hamburg. Hello, Manny. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
A little different perspective. The people I think are the most knowledgeable are the people that put the spot in Las Vegas, and because they have something at stake, money. And I think the Bills are a 7-point underdog. So if you were to take away the home field advantage that Carolina has, it'd be really a 4-point game, which is well within the what was in the aspects of a turnover. So my point is this, without stating the obvious, I think the team that turns the ball over more will lose the game. Doesn't matter all the technical stuff, the coaching, and who knows what. If you turn the ball over, you're going to lose the game. And if both teams turn the ball over the same amount of time, I think the score will be within 1 to 3 point difference. Another point I wanted to make, too, is, you know, we're putting down the Bills and Carolina's win, stating that they faced easy teams. But now if the Jets in San Francisco win the next two games, then we're liable to say, oh, you know what, the Bills in Carolina are not that bad. They beat two decent teams. So, we really don't know. Only time will tell. And that's it. I thank you very much for the time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. What was his first point?
It's a close game, basically. Most NFL
games
are close.
Yeah, so I was about to say that. Most NFL games are close games. I remember last night I'm watching the game, and what was this morning? This might have been – I woke up in the middle of the night like 4 o'clock in the morning for some reason.
This morning?
Yeah, you know, and I'm checking. It's bad. I checked my Twitter, and I saw that the Bengals players had said, you know, they yelled out in the locker room, we just lost to the worst team in the league. And it was like, well, if you lost to the worst team in the league, then what does that make you? But the point is, going into the game yesterday, I felt like, you know, this could be a close game. It could be a blowout by either one of these teams.
Houston and Cincinnati.
Yeah, Houston and Cincinnati. It ended up being a very close game. Most games in this league are very close games. You know, you will have your blowouts, of course. But most games are close games in this league. So you're always going to be within 7 to 10 points. It always comes down to turnovers, lucky bounces, and things like that. So that's why they say anything can happen on any given Sunday.
Sometimes things happen on Friday, too. And there's this news coming today, just 5 minutes ago, from Cincinnati. The Bengals are planning on firing offensive coordinator Ken Zampese, according to Ian Rappaport of NFL Network. They played a couple of games. They're 0-2, and they have yet to find the end zone.
Well, that is, you know, I hate to see people lose their jobs, but you're 2 games into the season, you have not scored 1 touchdown yet? That is tough.
Does this sound familiar at all?
It does sound familiar.
It was a year ago today we were doing the show, and the word came out that Greg Roman was fired. Now, the Bills had been in the end zone in the game against Baltimore and against the Jets, but now it's 2 straight years where offense coordinator – and think about this. Bengals have played 2 games, but 5 days after their season begins, because they played Sunday and then Thursday. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, for the Bills, it was that case last year, too. It was 5 days. 5 days after the season begins, the Bengals are ready to fire their offensive coordinator. Zampese's been with Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati since 2003, first as quarterbacks coach and then offensive coordinator. He got that job when Hugh Jackson went to Cleveland to be the head coach. They may promote quarterbacks coach Bill Lazor, who I believe has Buffalo connections, coached at UB, I believe. But the Bengals are going to fire their offensive coordinator after an 0-2 start, and that sounds awfully familiar to where we were a year ago.
Andy Dalton have another bad game like he had, he's going to be find himself on the bench as well, you know, because as a head coach in Marvin Lewis, I understand that Cincinnati doesn't fire their coaches, but, you know, you're not scoring touchdowns at all. You know, as a head coach now, I begin to get on the hot seat, you know, and I haven't been able to win a playoff game, and people are always asking about me being on the hot seat. We got to do something to change the team, and you need some sort of a spark plug, you know. So making that change at quarterback, quarterback is the only position that you can change and find a spark plug. And if your starting quarterback is not doing good at all and you're not able to score touchdowns, he has weapons. They have weapons out there, you know, but they still can't score. So if he doesn't get it together, he'll find himself on the bench, and there'll be a lot of changes out there.
A.J. McCurns is back up there in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Hey, our man Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, chips into the show a couple of times a week, including on Fridays, when he gets to meet and talk with the head coach of the Buffalo Bills over a cup of coffee. Time now for Coffee with the Coach, Chris Brown and Sean McDermott. It is presented by Tim Hortons.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. I'm Chris Brown, along with Bills head coach Sean McDermott, as the Bills get set for their Week 2 matchup down in Charlotte against the Carolina Panthers on Sunday. Coach, as always, thanks for joining us. Let's just put a bow on the Jets game. Big win in Week 1, obviously. A lot of good things, but I know you had a list of things that you wanted to clean up also. The perfectionist, not surprising, but four-minute offense was one thing that stuck out to me that you mentioned. I know the offense had a couple of kicks at it to close out the game, but they needed the defense to kind of bail them out a little bit with a couple of takeaways. Just your assessment and how you get that fixed when you know that defense knows what's coming and they're going to stack the box to try to stop you from running.
Right. Well, that's I did think we played good complementary football. So having said that, however, I felt like we could have closed the game out on offense, and sometimes that's a mindset. Sometimes that's an attitude, and I felt like we lost that eye of the tiger, if you will, down the stretch, and that's just something we have to work on. This game was a good starting point, a lot to work on, as you mentioned.
Your defensive line had a heavy rotation. I know Coach Frazier said way back in the spring that's part of how this defense is going to operate. We're going to rotate heavily up front so guys are fresh at the end. You're going to be going into a little bit warmer weather this weekend in Carolina. Should we expect the rotation to be just as much, maybe even more so this week?
Probably so. I would say just as much. The rest will call, you know, will be game plan specific and situation specific. Obviously, the weather could be a factor in terms of how we rotate players. We have to win with that Monday through Sunday, and that's really staying hydrated and whatnot. But we, in this system, as Coach Frazier mentioned, we do plan on rotating our defensive front so that we're fresh and we're giving different looks to the quarterback.
And then with respect to Carolina specifically, obviously a lot of people are going to draw the connections between you and the organization, having spent 6 years down there as defensive coordinator. But in terms of advantages, I know the media likes to play it up. Coaches like to downplay it. If there's one thing you can give your players this week, would it be a firm working knowledge of their personnel in terms of strengths and weaknesses? How might that serve your players this week?
Well, first and foremost, I'm not playing the game.
Right.
That's important to recognize. It'll be the players that are making the plays, just like they did last week. And the information I can give them during the week is important. And it'll be, hey, strengths and weaknesses of certain matchups and what this player may do better, what this player doesn't do quite as well. You know, that said, they're an extremely talented football team. We'll have our hands full in all three phases.
Now it's time for our fan question of the week, the opportunity for you, the fan, to ask Coach a question about the team or maybe his philosophy on football. We go out to our own Lauren Hall at a local Tim Hortons for this week's fan question.
Hey, Chris, we're at the Tim Hortons in Orchard Park right on Big Tree Road. We are with Grace, and Grace has a great question for Coach.
What's your favorite sport other than football?
All right, Coach, I think I know the answer to this one, and some other people might as well. Favorite sport other than football?
Well, Grace, that's a great question. My favorite sport other than football, in this case, is wrestling. I was able to start wrestling at a young age, the age of 4 1/2, and actually weighed 38 pounds. I just enjoyed wrestling throughout my entire childhood years, all the way into high school. Really just appreciated the mental toughness side of the sport and really what the sport taught me about life and how to handle oneself in the ups and downs that life so often brings to the table.
Seems like most linemen in football have some kind of wrestling background, and that's always good for hand work, right?
That is. It's good for leverage and hand work and hips. So that's all true.
All right, Coach. Thanks as always for the time. Good luck making it two in a row this Sunday down in Charlotte.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, that's Bills head coach Sean McDermott. This has been Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. We'll see you next week.
Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop, the official coffee of the Buffalo Bills. We got a call. Yeah, go ahead.
Did you know I was a wrestler?
I did not know that, Donald.
Yeah.
Got any stories for us?
I mean, I was third in the state twice,
what?
Fourth in the state once. I was
high school?
I did it 1 year of high school. I did it when I was younger as well. That was good.
Do you have any pictures you can bring in and share with the audience, perhaps?
I'm not too proud of those pictures. I had the tights on, and I'm just not too proud of those pictures.
Here's a call from Will in Rochester. Go ahead, Will. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. How are we doing?
Great. Doing great.
Hey, really just want to say, first off, absolutely love the show. I listen to you guys every night. I'm a truck driver, so I drive from Erie to Rochester every night. Love you guys.
Thanks, Will.
And it on the Buffalo Bills app.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Now, my question for you guys is, I mean, I understand we're only a game in the end of the season, coming up number two. We change coaches almost like we change our underwear around here. Just wondering what you guys think about McDermott's longevity. I've been listening between Carolina's commentary and Buffalo's commentary, a lot of the same philosophies, and it just seems like our boys are extremely upbeat. Things are really clicking for these guys. And granted, we're only a weekend. But what do you guys see for Coach McDermott's longevity with Buffalo Bills? I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
That's hard to say, Will. I mean, we hope. I think we all hope that he's here for a very long time. You know, if he's here for a very long time, that means he's doing some winning.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, he needs time, though, to get the right team that he wants to get here. And that's not 2 years. We're talking 3, 4, 5 years in, you know. And then, you know, we all want to see the team win this year and the team possibly go to the playoffs this year and next year and all of that stuff. But it takes time to build a team that you can – that you feel fits your scheme, your locker room, and all of that stuff that can win year after year after year, a core team of guys, you know. And so I hope that he's here for a long time. But ultimately, I don't know that. You know, it comes down to wins and losses.
Yeah. You tell me what the one-loss record is, and I'll tell you about exactly how long he'll be here. That's the life they have chosen. When Sean McDermott talked a couple of times this week, I mentioned it earlier in the show, about how we, meaning he and the Buffalo Bills, are just 2 weeks into their program, and the Carolina Panthers, in contrast, are 7 years into their program. I think that was a signal, not he's not lobbying for job security, but a signal on what he thinks it might take to build a winning program. And as you said, this is not about – certainly you want to win Sunday. You want to win as many as you can this year. But there's a bigger goal here in mind. That's what all the draft picks are about. And that's what – you know, I think what the long-term view of McDermott and Brandon Bean is. Let's win this year as much as we can. Let's win this Sunday. But let's build a program that endures and lasts so that you can say, you know, somebody can play the Bills in 6 or 7 years and say, well, those guys have been doing this for 6 or 7 years. Obviously, it's going pretty well. That's the goal, right?
I equate it to a business. It is a business, right? But let's think of a football team and a football program in terms of a business. And any CEO, a smart CEO of a Fortune 100, Fortune 500 company will tell you, yes, we have to make the right decisions for the company now, but we are always thinking about 5, 10 years out. We always have a 5-year plan, you know, and we're always thinking about the future, you know. So they are making moves for right now, but they're also making moves for the future. It's hard to do. It's hard for fans here in Western New York and Bills fans all over the country, but all over the world to think about, well, you're thinking about the future, you know, but they have to think about the future. They have to make moves for the future, or you don't have a future.
I know we just heard from Coach McDermott with Chris Brown, but I want to bring up something. He said something today. He got into kind of an interesting discussion, the coach did today, with the media in his pre-practice news conference. He was asked, I thought, an interesting question. Two games, so after they play Sunday, there'll be 2 games into the season. And Coach McDermott was asked, when will you know what kind of a team you have here this year? Here's what Sean McDermott answered to that question.
I think it varies, really, Matt. I really think it varies team to team, year to year. I know Coach Belichick talks about, I think he talks about November, you know, is when you finally know what you got. You know, and I think that's fair. I think that's, generally speaking, an accurate statement for a lot of us, a lot of teams, because there's, and you watch with our roster, there's some additions every week. There's, you know, taking a look with tryouts at some different guys, always trying to improve, and then knowing our current players, right, really what they do, do they do well? How do they handle different situations? And so you get a feel. The more we're around each other, the more you get a feel for each other. You know, it's like no different than your family. You know, you got a new child, and the more they grow, the more you're around them, you get to know them, their personalities, their strengths, their weaknesses, and so that kind of that's about what how I see it.
What do you think you'll learn about your team on Sunday?
That's a good question. I really think that. You know, we'll see how we travel, how we go on the road. You know, we've been through a lot of things, you know, over the course of the last couple of years. And then all the way through from spring to training camp to preseason, we've been through some experiences. We've been through and had to adapt to some things. The practice over here, our first practice in the stadium, with the rain, we had to adapt. You know, I'm confident in the resiliency of this football team. You saw that last week, the mental toughness of this football team. We get into the fourth quarter in a close game, and I thought they put together a real solid fourth quarter. So, you know, you learn a little bit more every week. And, you know, I just believe in this football team. I'm confident in these guys. They've got an it factor that you know, that a lot of teams look for. And I look forward to watching us continue to grow.
We all want the answer to that question right away, don't we? What kind of a team do you think you have here? We don't know. We don't know. We're one week in. And it goes even to the caller's question a minute ago, like, you know, when he talked about long-term outlook. We don't know, but it is a process. And I think if there's one thing McDermott has said, which I think resonates, it's, you know, you got to respect the process. One game in, long way to go. One win into the books, very good. All, you know, the results are promising after 1 week, but we'll see. You got to kind of let it unfold, I think.
You have to let it unfold. You're 1 week into this thing, and I mean, we talked about it earlier. You know, the Carolina Panthers, that coach can tell you what type of team he has. He knows what type of team he has. Yeah. We don't know yet, you know, and you have to let it play out. That's why last week it was like, man, Mike Tolbert, they need to work him inside more and not outside as much. Well, they're still trying to figure certain things out.
Sure.
They have to figure out who can do what on this team, who can't do what. We put guys in this situation to be successful. We got to figure out how can this guy be successful on our team. It takes a couple weeks to do that.
All right. Unfolding starting tonight, high school football. They're going to broadcast. They're going to air on MSG Network, and they're going to be played right here at New Era Field tonight, 7 o'clock. The Little Irish of Aquinas of Rochester against the Marauders of St. Joe's Collegiate Institute in Tonawanda, New York. 7 o'clock kickoff right across the parking lot at New Era Field under the night lights, Friday night lights. And the game will be produced and telecast on MSG Network and OneBuffalo.com, streamed on OneBuffalo.com. Chris Brown, who we just saw a moment ago, will handle the play-by-play. And this guy, Donald Jones, will handle the color commentary. The first of four broadcasts of high school football, Monsignor Martin Association games, presented by the Dent Concussion Center. You got to be pumped for tonight, Donald. This is going to be kind of cool, I think.
I'm pumped. You know, you'll hear us talk a lot about Casey Kelly tonight, which is Chad Kelly's little brother who plays for St. Joe's, the quarterback for St. Joe's. He's going to run around, make some plays. He's the leader of that team. So we're going to talk about him a lot and St. Joe's playmakers. But Aquinas, you know, they have some weapons on their team as well. They're a little bit different in their quarterback situations, as they will rotate two quarterbacks every two series, you know. And so that's something that's interesting to see how that plays out throughout the course of a game. But those are, you know, some of the little things that we're going to talk about.
What do you think that's all about? Why would they rotate like that?
They have two guys that really, one of them hasn't stepped up over the other one to take over that job, you know. And so they kind of play it by feel, you know, who's hot right now. And then they'll go two series, the next guy gets two series. And then, you know, to keep playing out like that, if nobody gets hot, you know, that's kind of how they're playing it right now. They have, you know, one's a senior, one's a sophomore. One guy has a stronger arm than the other one. One is a little bit more mobile than the other one, you know. So these are two different players, but both of them bring two different things to the game, you know. And so right now that's kind of how they're playing it.
These are two of the premier football programs in upstate New York, Rochester, of course, with Aquinas, and St. Joe's here in the Buffalo side. Mm-hmm. You guys are going to have fun with that tonight.
It's going to be fun. And I'm sure the crowd will be here, people coming up from Rochester.
Yeah.
And obviously St. Joe's fans will be there. Hopefully the stadium is rocking.
High school football, 7 o'clock tonight, right here at New Era Field, Aquinas.
It'll be lit.
New Era Field with Aquinas and St. Joe's at 7. And if you can't get to the game, you can watch the game, the first of our four games of high school football broadcast, Monsignor Martin broadcast on MSG Network and on OneBuffalo.com. 7 o'clock tonight with Donald Jones and Chris Brown. Back with more in a moment, the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Greg Cosell on the show from ESPN NFL Matchup, longtime producer at NFL Films, who broke down the video from the Bills' win over the Jets, and he talked about Tyrod Taylor's performance in the first game of the season.
And you're trying to create defined reads and defined throws. Now, those could be over the middle. You know, the one that he hit to Zay Jones, the play that I mentioned was over the middle, but that's a defined read. It's basically a one-read throw. So that's okay. You can do that. I think when he has to sit back there, if you start getting into the longer yardage situations, Donald, where he has to drop back and be a late in the down pocket quarterback, that's where I think he's not real comfortable throwing the ball in the middle of the field.
Also on the show today, Lorenzo Alexander with the lowdown, and he talked about how to handle Cam Newton in this game on Sunday.
Right now, I think he still hasn't found his rhythm quite yet. Mm-hmm. And obviously only had one preseason game come off the shoulder surgery and is still trying to figure it out, obviously with McCaffrey being introduced into their offense. But he's going to be a competitor, and obviously we can't allow him to find his rhythm against us. So we have to get after him early and often and try to make him, you know, pat the ball with some looks on the back end and put some hits on him because he is a big guy. But like any quarterback, they don't like being hit.
Nobody likes being hit. Our Twitter poll today dealt with how to handle the Carolina Panthers. What would be the key to a Bills victory over Carolina? The final results on our Twitter poll, 40% of you say containing Cam Newton would be job one, 41%. 34% say a balanced passing attack. 18% say establishing the run game. 7% say coaching. Donald, I'm right from the start of the show, I've said I think the key to this game lies on the offensive side of the ball for Buffalo. Yes, be more balanced to hit those targets downfield. And, yes, see if you can run the ball nearly as well as you did last week. If they can do that, they got a chance. But I think the Bills are underdogs for a good reason this week.
I think that the key to this game is going to be plaster those receivers, you know, and make sure you know where those guys are, especially Christian McCaffrey. The corners, this would be a tough matchup for these guys, you know, and Cam Newton is going to try to get them the ball. He's going to throw it up to these guys, so we'll see how the technique plays out for these corners against those tall 6'4", 6'5", physical wide receivers of the Panthers.
Well, the game is at 1 o'clock on Sunday from Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'll be there along with Mark Kelso, the broadcast on our flagship radio station in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, with pregame coverage up and down the Bills Radio Network. Starts at 11 a.m., kickoff at 1 o'clock. Donald will be here after the game, 11:30 on Sunday night, along with Ruben Brown for Bills Tonight. Right? You're going to recap the game for the television audience.
The Hall of Fame nominee, Ruben Brown. Don't
yes,
forget
Hall
that
Hall of Fame
part
nominee, Ruben Brown.
Yeah, I'll be here. Cool. We'll be working together.
All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Derek Kramer, Entercom Borda, production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Colton, Nick Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. Enjoy the game. We'll see you Monday at 12 noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.